Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Chad Brown here. You may remember me as a linebacker in the NFL or as a reptile breeder and the owner of Pro Exotic. I've been herping since I was a boy, and I've dedicated my life to advancing the industry and educating the community about the importance of reptiles. I also love to encourage the joy of breeding and keeping reptiles as a hobbyist, which is why my partner Robin Markland and I created the Reptile Report. The Reptile Report is our online news aggregation site bringing you the most up-to-date discussions from the reptile world. Visit thereptilereport.com every day to stay on top of the latest reptile news and information. We encourage you to visit the site and submit your exciting reptile news, photos, and links so we can feature outstanding breeders and hobbyists just like you. The Reptile Report offers powerful branding and marketing exposure for your business, and the best part is, it's free. If you're a buyer or a breeder, you gotta check out the Reptile Report Marketplace. The Marketplace is the reptile world's most complete buying and selling destination, full of features to help put you in touch with the perfect deal. Find exactly what you're looking for with our advanced search system. Search by sex, weight, morph, or other keywords, and use our Buy It Now option to buy that animal right now. Go to marketplace.thereptilereport.com and register your account for free. Be sure to link your Marketplace account to your Ship Your Reptiles account to earn free tokens with each shipping label you book. Use the Marketplace to sell your animals and supplies and maximize your exposure with a platinum ad that also gets fed to the Reptile Report and our powerful Marketplace Facebook page. Buying or selling? Use shipyourreptiles.com to take advantage of our discounted priority overnight shipping rate. ShipYourReptiles.com can also supply you with the materials needed to safely ship your animals successfully. Use ShipYourReptiles.com to take advantage of our discounted priority overnight shipping rates, the materials needed to ship the reptiles successfully, live customer support, and our live, on-time arrival insurance program. We got you covered. Visit thereptilereport.com to learn or share about the animals. Click on the link to the marketplace, find that perfect pet or breeder, then visit shipreptiles.com to ship that animal anywhere in the United States. We are your one-stop shop for everything reptile related.
Python Radio brought to you by Morelia Python Forums, www.moreliapythons.com. And Owen, I am excited for this episode. There's a couple reasons why. One,
I'm ready to go. You had a wonderful trip where you lounged about and sent me pictures every, hour on the hour. And you went to the St. Augustine Alligator Farm. Yeah, you better be well-rested, you jerk.
Yes. it's pretty cool to listen to the show as a listener instead of being the host. Because I listen, I can yell at the radio as I'm driving and smack my steering wheel and all kinds of crazy stuff and say, "What are you talking about?"
it's
good stuff.
I understand, and I do revel in that fact because I love to think of that you're listening to the show and screaming as your wife is sitting next to you, just kind of giving you weird looks of what the hell's the matter with you kind of thing. So yeah, if I can make that happen, good episode. So.
You did what you're supposed to. But the other reason is we're kicking off a new segment, a new type of thing that we're going to do, and it's the Reptile Insider. And basically, we're going to be joined by either Chad Brown or Robin Markland, both or one or the other. And you probably know these guys from Pro Exotics, Ship Your Reptiles, The Reptile Report. They have the new online reptile classified spot called the Reptile Marketplace, which is Chad's going to be here tonight giving us a little bit of info on that. But each episode, they're going to, you know, we're going to hit on a topic and we're going to hear what they have to say about it. And, you know, I think that coming from their experience in the reptile hobby, I think it's going to be a cool thing. And I'm looking forward to it. We also are we have some topics lined up of what we're going to hit on, and it's not going to, you know, it's not going to be, it's just going to be a short, like, I think of Reptile Radio Days with their quick blast type of thing where they come in, they talk about a topic, and then, you know, that's it. They hit on the points. But, yeah, if you have a topic that you would like to hear us talk about, by all means, you can post it up on our Facebook page. You can send us an email at info@moreliapythonradio.com. It should be cool stuff. I don't know if, let me see if I have anything. I just want to real quick before we bring Chad on, I want to give a shout out to, Rob Stone. He filled in for me last week.
Yes.
And a big thanks to him. I always enjoy listening to him. I don't know what it
he's
is about that guy,
become,
but
like, he's kind of become our impromptu reserve host. It's like,
yes.
You know, back in the beginning, we used to just kept dragging Luke Snell on for a little bit. Now it's like every time we need a reserve host, we just grab Rob. So,
yeah
why not?
He's,
it's cool.
He actually used to work at Pro Exotics way back in the day.
I know.
So,
and he's listened to us from the get-go, and he brings up stuff that I don't even remember from, like, the first, like, three episodes we ever did. And somehow we always get back to talking about how I botched that one Blake interview. So, it's all that stuff. So it was cool. Very good job done by Rob, and he's furthered my need and or want for rhino rat snakes again. So,
right. And
after
we talk to Chad, we're going to have Chris back on because you guys did a lousy job at talking about scrubs.
I know, we suck. We suck. Everybody's like, want scrubs and white lips, and we didn't even talk about scrubs or white lips because I'm a terrible host when left to my own devices. Is this what you want to hear? So
Chris is coming back on tonight, and he's going to be talking with us about, it's both you guys, your white lip projects and scrub projects and different takes and stuff. So looking forward to that. But let's get Chad on here and let's get this going. Hey, Chad, is that you?
Yep.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to Morelia Python Radio. We're doing
thanks
great.
For having me on, and thanks for starting this new segment with Robin and myself.
Absolutely, no,
our pleasure. It's cool. And, I just recently joined that Reptile Report Marketplace, and I'm having fun tinkering around with it, seeing all the cool stuff I can do. So it's very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate it. It's it's taken a long time for us to, get this up and running. We've had a couple, fits and starts with it. Ever since we started the Reptile Report itself, and that was one of the number one things we got back as far as feedback is, we love the Reptile Report. We love all the content. We love all the great information. But when are you guys going to do a classified site? So it's been going for about 2.5 months now, and things are starting to pick up. We're definitely picking up as far as the number of people who are registered to place ads, and we're, most days we're over 2,200 ads on the site at a time. So the traffic started to pick up as we really get into that main part of the selling season here.
Wow. Awesome.
So
cool.
I guess the topic that we're going to hit on tonight is the marketplace. Can you explain to us, talk about like the ins and outs of it and give us a little, some of the features and, you guys have put it together based on, I guess it's your experience working with other classified sites and what you like and what you don't like. And, I'm sure you tweaked it to make it very user-friendly. So hit on some of this stuff.
Sure. Well, one of the more interesting parts of this whole thing is when we first started thinking about this project, we looked at all the other reptile classified sites. And anyone who's been in the reptile game for as long as Rob and I have, you have seen reptile classified sites come and go. There's always a new one. It seems as if every month I get an email from somebody who's going to start a new classified site, and they always claim it's going to be the, you know, reptile internet's number one destination for reptiles. And in the course of studying these sites and writing down, you know, taking notes on what they do and what they don't do well, and obviously with Kingsnake being the predominant classified site for the last 20 years in the reptile world, you know, we start to figure out, well, this site does this well, this site doesn't do this so well. And then it got to the point where we thought, well, why are we even looking at reptile sites? The model for running a good classified has been firmly established by eBay, by Amazon. So while we definitely took notes and tweaked some things based on reptile sites, we thought, why not aim a little bit higher? You know, the reptile world is such a small world. Obviously, folks outside of the reptile world have figured out this classified thing and do it really well and do it at a really high level. So we focused on those two sites in particular and trying to model our sites after them. One of the great things about those sites, which, you know, differs from, say, Kingsnake is run on a very old, you know, system of where it doesn't have a lot of filters. And anyone who's been on Kingsnake, you know, the last 10 years or just last week, if you're looking for something very specific, it can be very hard to find that. If you're looking for a male Mojave ball python that's over 300 grams, you have to literally search and look at every single ball python ad, and it becomes overwhelming at some point if you're trying to find something very specific. So we want to allow the user, whether it's someone trying to sell something or someone trying to buy something, the ability to either, you know, someone that's looking for your one animal, for them to find it very quickly and easily, or for someone who's trying to find a very specific set of animals or a list of animals, to find that animal easily. So we've got filters by weight, filters by male and female, filters whether you're willing to trade or not, you know, filters by age, filters by species. You can also search out particular keywords as well. So that's always going to be helpful when dealing with some of these morphs, which, you know, every week within, you know, leopard geckos or corn snakes or ball pythons or heck, even bitter dragons, there seems to be a new morph or a new morph name. Rather than having a set list of keywords, which you kind of, with a drop-down menu, this way you can type in a specific word, and then it'll match up those words either in the ad or in the copy of the ad itself. So, again, if you have one animal to sell, and there's that customer looking for that animal, by using the ReptilePort marketplace and their filters, they'll be able to find that specific animal and find an animal and buy it from you.
That's cool.
You know, we've also added a number of other features as well. Anybody who sold reptiles at a decent level has discovered the frustration of, I can't always be by my phone, nor can I always be by my computer to answer every question from someone. And sometimes someone just wants to simply buy the animal. I've written such a good ad, and I've included such, you know, detailed photos, that that's all the information that they need, and they just want to buy the animal. So we've included a buy it now feature, where if you don't want to deal with the hassle of emails and phone calls back and forth, someone can click that buy it now button. It goes to the PayPal system. You receive the money. You receive an email that someone purchased that animal or that dry good. And then the next step is simply for you to arrange shipping with that person. So it really streamlines that process from a buyer and from a seller standpoint. If you're someone who's got a very busy day job, or maybe you work evenings and nights when most reptile people are inquiring about particular animals and it's difficult for you to get back to them and have a real live dialogue, the Buy It Now feature can be really helpful for someone who's got those type of time constraints and allow someone literally just click one button, buy that animal, They've purchased the animal. They've paid for the shipping. And all you have to do is really essentially arrange that shipping process. So it's a very streamlined way to purchase and to sell reptiles. And in the course of doing the introduction for me, you talked about Prozac Reptiles, obviously, which we were one of the largest reptile breeders on the planet for 20 years and unfortunately ended with a fire. But you also talked about Shiffy Reptiles.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we really are happy about with the Reptile Report Marketplace is the tie between those two sites. So essentially every time you ship a reptile with Shiffy Reptiles and you have your Reptile Report Marketplace account tied to your Shiffy Reptiles account, we'll give you free tokens, which I'll get to more detail about the tokens in a minute. We'll give you free tokens at the Reptile Report Marketplace. So you can essentially, each time you ship it or sell a reptile, ship a reptile, you get free tokens, which then allow you to run more ads. So from a shipping standpoint, of course, we want you to be successful selling reptiles at the Reptile Report Marketplace if you're a Ship Your Reptiles customer, because we're going to go ahead and give you more ads as you continue to ship with us. So as a reward for doing your shipping with us, we essentially will give you free ads over at the marketplace in hopes that you'll sell more stuff and ship more stuff with us. It's kind of essentially like a loyalty program. And if you're someone who's having decent success selling and shipping, I can imagine situations where your Reptile Report marketplace ads are going to be essentially be free because you continue shipping and selling animals. And it allows you to be, you know, a very successful seller and shipper of those animals. Now, let me get back to what I touched on a second ago, which was the tokens. Looking at all the different ways that people structure classified accounts, it gets kind of tricky once you start giving people options as far as what types of ads they'd like to run. We offer three different levels of ad. We've got a silver, a gold, and a platinum ad. And folks who are familiar with Kingsnake, he's got a kind of a standard account and an enhanced account. We came up with three different levels of ads, but then the question becomes, well, how do you pay for those different levels of ads? Do I get a standard account and I can only place standard ads? Or do I get a platinum account and I can only place platinum ads? What we've done is we've given you the flexibility to place any ad in any of the three categories you want by creating a token system. So instead of buying a block of time at the Reptile Report Marketplace, you buy a number of tokens. And the more tokens you buy, the cheaper each of those tokens becomes. And at the top-level account or top-level purchase of tokens, you're really paying less than 1 cent per token. So it's a pretty economical way to purchase a classified account. The tokens never expire. So if you were to, unfortunately, knock on wood, maybe your five-year-old son kicks the plug out of your incubator and all this year's production, unfortunately, doesn't make it because your eggs go bad in the incubator, well, that's fine. You didn't buy an account with a set time period. You bought tokens which never expire. So your tokens will still be there next year when you've got babies for sale. Or maybe you have a very limited window of production, or maybe you're only going to produce one or two clutches a year. So to buy a 6 month or a year account may seem kind of silly because, you know, I'm not going to have animals to sell for that long. I really only want to advertise this one clutch of animals. That's great. You can buy, like I said, various levels of tokens accounts with us, and those tokens never expire. So if you don't use those tokens up, they'll be good next year when you have one or two clutches left for sale. Going back to the different levels of ads. So you purchase your bulk of tokens, and suppose you've got some really great animal. You've hatched out some blue tree monitors, and you really want to publicize those. You're going to ask for, you know, a pretty good price for those because you're probably only one few people on the planet who's actually produced captive blue tree monitors, and you want to purchase a platinum ad, which costs you four tokens. That's fantastic. You purchase that platinum ad. It will give you a feature not only at the Reptile Report marketplace, but those platinum ads then get stuck into the feed over at the Reptile Report itself. So on the front page of the Reptile Report, there is a random sampling of three ads every time you look at the front page at the Reptile Report or the main page of the Reptile Report. But if you go to, say, the ball python page at the Reptile Report, that will include ball python platinum ads. You go to the monitor page, that will include monitor platinum ads. So the ads are specifically tuned, and when they go into the Reptile Report, to that particular interest outside of the front page and the main page, which are just kind of random ads. It also will be included at our Reptile Report Facebook page, which now is gaining, you know, dozens and dozens of followers every single day. Some people prefer to have that Facebook feed to look at animals. And Facebook has some certain advantages because everyone's kind of tuned into Facebook, and there's so many apps for Facebook. So it's nice to have that Facebook feed where your platinum ads can be seen. At the same time, sometimes Facebook is a bit of a running river, and if you're not looking at the right time, you can miss someone's ad. But, of course, it'll always be over there at the Reptile Report Marketplace. So there's, like I said, there's the silver ad, which is one token, the gold ad, which is two tokens, and the platinum ad, our full featured ad, which is four tokens. So by purchasing different levels of ads, you can highlight your animals and make the best use of the token package you purchase. Maybe you've got something very generic for sale. Maybe you're selling, I don't know, 10-gallon aquariums or hide spots, and there's no reason to purchase a platinum ad. You can just simply purchase a silver ad. It'll be included on the Reptile Report Marketplace, and people can find it. It has the searchability just as all the other ads do, just won't be pushed up to the Reptile Report itself nor to the Reptile Report Facebook page. So we feel as if we've created a very dynamic system that allows the smallest user, someone with just a clutch or a single animal to sell, to the largest user, someone's like, say, a Josh's Frogs or Triple L Reptiles, which runs hundreds of ads at a time, that we can accommodate both those type of businesses really serve those customers who are looking for either types of businesses very well. So, you know, to find something for Josh's Frogs, I mean, he's got an incredible number of ads posted up. He does great ads, and it's not very difficult to find his ads. You look at to his account, if you look at just Josh's Frogs as a seller, you can then in turn see all of that. Or, again, if you're looking for something very specific and you don't know who the seller is going to be, you can search for, again, like I said, that male Mojave ball python, you know, 300 grams and over. That animal, if it's for sale on the Reptile Report Marketplace, you're going to find that as well.
Cool.
Wow, that's... Yeah, that's top notch,
nice.
Man.
Different.
I'm trying to overwhelm you with all that information there. I mean, at the same time, it's a classified system, so there's nothing complicated about it. Whether you're looking for animals or trying to sell animals, nothing, you know, it's not rocket science. But we did want to add features that would set us apart from, you know, as I mentioned, Kingsnake, and allow us our users a lot more customization as far as placing ads, and our customers who are going to be trying to find animals have the ability to source animals out very quickly without having to go through pages and pages and pages of ads.
Wow.
Yeah. And I like the token idea because it does give you a lot more freedom of, you know, sometimes I'll post up at the height of my baby, sell out, or maybe have only one or two ads and or not really list anything, but I'm still paying for that whole year if I'm not using. With this, I can just kind of hoard my tokens until next year. So it's really cool.
Yeah, and if you're somebody who really wants to put your animals out there, the ads can re-list every day if you choose to, or every 2 days, or every 3 days, or every week. You can have that ad re-list as frequently or as infrequently as you would like. So if you really want to, you know, get maximum eyeballs, I would, you know, suggest buying a larger token package, which will allow you to do that. And again, once that animal sells, then you can stop running those ads. Then you won't be using all those tokens. You can use them, you know, and focus those or hold those tokens until you have some next animal that you really want to sell, and you want to relist those ads as frequently as possible as well. So again, we try to create a system that generates as much flexibility for the users as possible.
Yeah, and it also applies to people who are maybe not breeders, who are just maybe people who want to sell one animal that they don't have to buy a couple months worth of ad space on a website. They can just go here and buy the tokens that they need to sell one or two animals. So it's really kind of conducive for everybody. And I do like the use of the reptile report and all those tools. So it's really cool.
Yeah. You know, obviously within the reptile, we don't really want to push impulse buys, but if somebody is open to report and they're a amphibian fan and they happen to come across your red-eyed tree frog ad, that's not necessarily an impulse. I think somebody who's researching and learning and reading about, you know, the frogs over there at their reptile report, those ads constantly in front of them, I think will generate some traffic for your ad and also, you know, bring some eyeballs to you and bring some awareness to you and what you've done. And we've hopefully created what we would like to think of as kind of a great universe of marketing, of publicizing, and then selling reptiles. So if you are someone who posts in forums and you do big photos and you do great content, there's a strong chance that your post in a forum can be featured at the Reptile Report.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if you are the person who does that, then that lends more credibility to you when you're trying to sell animals. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you've got content up on, you know, again, the frog section over there at the Reptile Report, and now your ads are popping up there, now you're no longer just someone selling animals. You're a credible person. You've, you know, given yourself kind of an expert stamp by how well you post photos at whatever forum you post at, but it's featured over there at the Reptile Report. That gives people much more comfort when they want to buy animals for it from you. They see your content. They see your photos. They see maybe you've done some photos of your setups or some breeding photos or whatever the case may be. But then they see your ad, and they go, oh, this is that guy. I loved his post. Now he's selling animals. I want to buy from him. So we want to give, again, the seller the opportunity to publicize themselves and essentially market themselves. But we also want to give the buyers a chance to essentially kind of research and have gain a sense of comfort. So if you see when someone continually show up at whatever section of the Reptile Report you're looking at and you're interested in buying animals in that section, now this person is selling animals, you can't help but be more comfortable. You can't help but be more confident in that purchase. This is a stand-up person. This is a person with a track record. This is a person who is public with his information. This is a person I can trust. Therefore, it makes that person more likely to buy animals from me. So we're really trying to, like I said, create, this confidence and this universe where people can come and learn and also buy and sell, and then also the universe of shipping and then getting free ads. So we're trying to create this this world to itself with the Reptile Report, Ship Your Reptiles, and the marketplace where people can have all those needs met. Learn something, gain confidence in who they're buying from, buy, sell, and trade, and also ship. So it's a kind of a couple different worlds that we're trying to compile into one big, strong universe for the reptile buyers and sellers.
It's a one-stop shop, guys. I mean, come on now. You get everything going right there. It's great.
Yeah. We're very proud of it. When we started the Reptile Report Marketplace, The origins was incredibly simple, and if you got time for a quick story here.
Good.
Yeah.
When we started Shipping Reptiles, it really expanded Robin's and my personal reptile horizons quite a bit because we, focused on Asian rat snakes. And, we did boas and pythons, but we mainly focused on balls. We had some bloods, and we had some Morelia, some bolins. We had some monitors, but we were pretty well focused on giraffe snakes, balls, and some monitor species. So we frequented those forums. But once you start a shipping site, you want to be able to be an expert at shipping. So you go to the frog forums, and you go to the invert forums, and you go to turtles and tortoise forums, and trying to figure out What are the shipping questions? What are the shipping issues? How can I help people with this process? What's the, you know, correct size box to ship a Russian tortoise? And all these questions that will come up on the course of the forums. But what ends up happening is Robin and myself are spending a couple of hours each day searching out the forums, searching out shipping questions, and in Robin's case, trying to answer every single question possible. And he was saying, you know, kind of lamenting to me one day, it'd be great if we could just, you know, hire maybe some, you know, some college kid to kind of compile all these for us and, you know, give it to us once a day, once a week, or whatever the case may be. And I thought, you know what? This is really an opportunity for us to compile all this reptile information, not just what's important to us, but what's important to everybody. So that was the seed which started the Reptile Report. It was our need to try to service shipping customers, realizing in turn that folks would really like to, instead of visiting 10 different forums a day to kind of get your daily reptile knowledge, you visit the Reptile Report, we find all the best content for you, and then we don't actually, you know, steal any content. It takes you back to that forum. That forum gets the clicks. The folks who, you know, did those photographs, they get the clicks and they get the credit at their home forum, but they also get credit at the Reptile Report. And for the end user, it's great because all this fantastic information is compiled all in one place. So from, you know, Robin's need to streamline his day to now having, you know, the Reptile Report itself with, you know, tens of thousands of individual posts there, and now the Reptile Report marketplace itself, with, you know, again, you know, about 2,200 ads are posted up most days, and over 600 registered account holders. From a simple idea has kind of branched off into this, you know, this awesome thing that we're doing right now.
Wow, that's really cool. I'm glad he did that.
I really
I think you guys are top notch when it comes to anything that you guys have done over the years. I've used Ship Your Reptiles for quite a while and I've always had great experiences. There was a while back I was talking about, I always forget his name, the guy who answers the phone when you call to get your package picked up.
Is that Brad or
Brad,
Andy?
Yeah.
One of those, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, every time I called that guy, I'm big on customer service because I work in the retail field. So, you know, I kept raving about, you know, just the way, just the whole feel of the whole thing was just great. You know, nothing was too much trouble. You know, if there was a problem or a question, I was helped every time. And, you know, I'm glad that it's now kind of like evolved into this universe, as you put it. And, you know, it's just a great thing. So I'm excited about it.
Well, thanks.
I just need some animals to sell.
Right. Well, when we started breeding reptiles with prototype reptiles, you know, I played in the NFL for 15 seasons, and that obviously has its own financial rewards to it. So my focus when we were breeding reptiles was providing people with the best possible reptile experience I possibly could. A great healthy animal, great information about the animal, great customer service. And I never felt the need to pinch pennies because I wasn't trying to, you know, count on my pennies for my reptile sales to feed my family. I, you know, had a good job playing NFL football. So that kind of mantra and that kind of mindset, whether it was with TempGun.com or any of our other ventures now with PSG Heat selling the heat tape, we try to carry that same type of mindset. No request is really too small. We've got time for the customers. You guys are the most important part of this whole thing. Without our customers, we would be nothing. And really try to carry that through everything that we do, whether it's meeting us at a show, whether it's, you know, on Morelia Radio, whether it's talking at a show, which Rob and I spoke at about 12 different shows last year, or interacting with us over the phone or via email. We want to service the heck out of our customers because That was kind of a mindset we established with Pro Exotics Reptiles, just because of my background in the NFL and not having to, you know, squeeze every penny out of every sale. But come to realize, that's just great customer service. People just want to be treated well. So, you know, whether I play the NFL or not, now with all these other businesses that we have and we've built up together, Robin and myself, we just want to service people and give them a great, fantastic experience. And it's kind of weird to, you know, someone to call and order some packages to ship their animal and get off the phone and go, wow, that was fantastic. But that's what we want. We want Brad to help people. We want Kathy, if you speak to Kathy, who's, you know, also works for Shippy Reptiles, we want to dazzle people with how much we care and how much attention we give them and how well we service their needs. And it's turned out that mindset from Pro Exotics and even NFL is really just a great business model. It's just a great way to do business.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we've talked about it multiple times on the show that I think that's sometimes the thing that, you know, in the reptile world, if you're going to venture into a breeding business or you know, even if you're going to do it as a hobby that pays for itself or whatever, I think that the whole, you know, breeding reptiles is one thing, but then getting on the end of it and trying to sell reptiles, that's a whole different thing, you know. And I think people often forget the customer service, you know, part of it. We preach a lot on the show about buying from, you know, reputable breeders, because you're able to go back to that breeder if you have a problem or a question, or maybe, you know, you've raised the animal up and now you get to a point where you're going to take a shot at breeding, and you can always, you know, rely on that breeder to give you some insight or some knowledge or some tips or, you know, anything like that. And that's invaluable, you know. And if you're able to do that, if you're able to do that, then, I mean, I think you have people that become loyal to you as a customer, and you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started doing reptiles, one of my draws to it was the fact that I thought this is great. I'll just get to breed reptiles, and I won't have to deal with people. and then, you know, and then consequently, you grow your business, so you need some employees, and then, what is your business built on? It's built on customer service and people being loyal to you. So you have to deal with people. So as much as we may, you know, love that quiet time, just you and your animals, cleaning your racks or feeding your animals, which is fantastic. I loved that time as well. That was, you know, some of the most special times I had, just me alone in the warehouse just taking care of the animals. At the same time, it is a people business, and sales is a people business, and you have to, you know, make your customers feel good. You have to make them feel confident, and you have to create a perception about yourself as being, you know, a reputable and upstanding person. And it's a weird, strange business, because there's lots of fly-by-night lighters, and, you know, anybody with a spare bedroom or some room in their garage can suddenly become a reptile breeder. And, you know, anybody who's spent any time over there at Fauna has certainly read some of the horror stories that come from, you know, our business. So, you know, we would like to, you know, be at the forefront of presenting a professional image, and hopefully, you know, other people feel the same way that we do and want to, you know, what essentially was a, you know, a hobby for a bunch of weirdos just 20 or 30 years ago is now really a mainstream hobby. And I think in order for us to have some long-term success to deal with a lot of the regulatory issues that we're dealing with, a lot of the legislative issues that we're dealing with, we have to present a more professional, more upfront type of image, because, you know, guys breeding snakes in their spare bedroom are not going to be able to stop some of these laws that they're trying to, you know, shut us down with. We need people, you know, with big companies, with big swords and big sticks. You know, somebody, I know we as a reptile business don't always love the animals that end up in big box stores, but that's, you know, those folks who provide those animals to those big box stores, Petco's and PetSmart's, they are at the forefront of leading the fight to protect my interest and your interest and everyone else's interest in keeping reptiles. So it's we're at a strange point where there's a hobbyist, there's a hobbyist side, there's a professional side, and there's all our enemies who want to not allow either side to do what we do, and we need to somehow come together and present a united professional image to those folks who want to stop us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I couldn't be more excited about working with you guys. I'm big on, like you said, being loyal, and because I use you guys, I feel very confident in everything that you guys do, and I'm just excited about it. And you know, thanks for coming on and talking with us, and giving us a chance and helping us spread the education about reptiles. You know, that's kind of what we're about. You know, just making sure that people have knowledge that they can listen back to. And I mean, when I get comments from people about, I listened to this show and this really helped me out. And, cause it's not us, it's not me and Owen. It's really the guests that we have on and sharing the knowledge from people from all around the world. Making it a positive.
Rob and I are definitely, definitely excited. We've in the course of playing professional football, I've been playing football since I was 6 years old. I feel compelled to coach, and so I have, camps back in my hometown of Pasadena, California, and I do a lot of coaching in Colorado because it would seem such a waste, not to share some of this knowledge. It's not even my knowledge. I was coached by great coaches and played with Hall of Fame players. How can I not share the things I learned from those guys? And now Rob and I are essentially taking that same approach by, joining forces with you guys, is to share all this knowledge that we've learned over the years. Some of it will be, reptile specific about, dealing with certain species, and some of it will be business oriented. Some of it will be, shipping oriented. But at the same time, we'll be sharing this knowledge that we've learned over the last 20 years and want to, enlighten others who, maybe not have the opportunity to gain these same experiences and meet the people that we've met and work with the species that we've worked with. So this is going to be an exciting run for us as well. So I'm happy to do this, first show and talk about the marketplace, but I look forward to the coming shows in the coming weeks and months and dealing with some of these fun topics.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it should be pretty cool. So.
Yeah.
So, all right. I'll throw out the website real quick, the address. I think it's www.marketplace.thereptilereport.com, and that's where you can.
This is not the 90s anymore. We don't have to say www. So if you just go marketplace.reptilereport.com, you'll get
there.
Good point.
But he likes saying the W, so.
Anything else you wanted to hit on before?
Before we let
you
go.
Again, just thankful for the opportunity, and I would certainly encourage folks who haven't checked out the Reptile Report itself and the Reptile Report Marketplace to check those out. We've got some, like I said, some awesome folks placing some awesome ads, and we're just now getting to that time of the year where things are starting to hatch, and I'm sure you'll see some amazing, amazing animals over the course of the next couple weeks and months with the Reptile Report Marketplace for sale. So, check it out. Even if you're not interested in buying, it's always fun to see what people are producing, what the value of the animals are, which is always constantly changing, and, what's the latest, greatest, and what's the hottest thing out there. So check it out. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right.
Definitely.
Appreciate it.
All right. See ya. You guys have a good
all
show.
Right. Thanks. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Yeah, let's click Chris on here because he's been holding for a while.
Chris is still here. That's right. Chris is here.
Yeah.
Chris is here.
I'm real excited about working with those guys. And like I said, I think that they're doing good things for the hobby, business, whatever you guys want to call it or however you want to call it. You guys talked a lot about that last week, the whole business side of it and partnerships and all that kind of stuff. Before we get rolling with some white lip talk, this actually kind of ties into. I just wanted to hit on a couple things that I saw in the news. Number one, I'm going to say this.
Yes.
I know. Here's my. I don't know if it's going to be a rant or whatever, but I'm going to step up on my soapbox and talk for a second. So
now he'll be almost as tall as everybody else.
Not as tall as you.
Oh, that was nice.
yeah, that was good.
Quick
on your feet. Anyway, you know, when you're out of the loop for a week, right?
Yes.
I've sort of come to grips with the fact that Facebook is kind of the reptile spot. I'm tired of like trying to, you know, to fight it, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word or whatever, but I'll tell you what, man, if you're out of the loop for a week, cause I went on vacation, you pull yourself out of the loop. It's impossible to find what anybody is talking about, you know, because these all the posts are gone. I can't find shit. People are sending me questions about, did you see this? Did you see that? And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about because I basically unplugged.
What the hell are you saying?
Yeah, I unplugged for the week and, you know, other than sending you guys some messages here and there, but for the most part, I didn't really follow
here and there
on.
Once every half hour.
Like every 5 seconds.
Trying to make us hate our lives as he's away.
Yeah. But, oh, man, it's so, I don't know, man. Either they have to come up with a better way to do it, or I guess that shit just gets lost, you know? I don't know how else to – it's not like you can have a search feature or – I don't know, man. It's just an observation that I had from last week, so now I'll get down. But another thing, I don't know if you guys caught this, but apparently there was a I guess it's a storefront reptile spot. And it's called Reptile Passions, and they got robbed.
Uh-huh.
Did you see that video?
Yes, I saw it, and it was disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, and obviously the guy that was running around there knew where to go, because if you look at him, he's pulling the cages, and he knows – what cages
he
grab,
knew exactly
go,
what he was
what
looking
do.
For.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, listen, if you go into my snake room, it's your first time in my snake room, you can see in most of the cages, you know what's in there, but the drawers, you can't see in, so you got to open the drawers. The guy was opening the drawers and grabbing an animal and throwing it in. And then he was skipping a few drawers, opening another one, grabbing the animal, throwing it in. So he knew where the animals were in each drawer, and it's just disgusting. I mean, you guys would probably find me in the fetal position in my shower after 4 days if someone had come into my snake room and ripped off a bunch of my animals. Because not only are they the animals that I've worked hard on to raise and breed, but there's an emotional connection to some of them. And if they're just taken and gone, the people who own those animals, they may never see them again. Because
you don't know what this guy's doing with them. If he's trying to turn them around for a quick buck, I'm sure he's not taking care of them. So kind of their well-being at this point is in question.
And you're saying that you're hoping to God he's going to be one of those idiots that tries to sell them quickly, goes to a reptile show and goes, how much will you give me for it, and gets caught. The other scary thing is that he might not be trying to sell them quickly. He might be attempting to, I don't know, raise them up and breed them, wait until everything dies down and nobody questions where he got these animals from.
I just don't know how you hide a pied retic at this point.
You raise it up and you breed it with your other stuff when pied retics are prevalent. By the time you're breeding, pied retics are all over the place.
I guess so.
But, the thing is, like, it's like the same thing goes with, they had a few albino carpets stolen from Prehistoric Pet. They had an albino blue tongue stolen from Seagull.
Yeah.
And these are things like, these are like one-of-a-kind animals at the time. Where are they? No one recovered them. But for all you know, they're in somebody's basement being raised up silently until eventually you can sell them or you ship them overseas or you do whatever. There are ways around this stuff. It's just, it's disgusting that you go that far. I've posted a man with an assault rifle at my basement doorstep. So we have to sell some super caramel so I can pay his salary. But if anybody comes near my snake room, they're going to get shot now.
Well, that's
I don't know,
dude.
I'm just going to start keeping venomous in tubs again, see if somebody tries to grab out of my rack then.
Label it albino boa constrictor, and it's a death adder. Yeah.
Oh, no.
God, no, I thought it was the bullet.
So, I mean, that brings up a whole bunch of questions or, you know, and one of the things that kind of popped into my mind was, I guess because my dad is a cop, so, you know, he's big on, like, you know, when you leave your house for any extended period of time, that if you're not going to have anybody there, you don't post it up on Facebook or anything like that, you know what I mean? But, you know, I wouldn't leave my house. My brother stayed here for the week, you know, so it wasn't like there was nobody here, but at the same time, you know, that brings up that thought of, you know, if you're going away for an extended period of time, you know, how do you keep your collection secure? And also, like, who do you invite into your snake room? You know what I mean? Like, so if you kind of keep it private, I look at two sides of that. You know, if you keep it private, then you might be missing out on something. You know what I mean? And then if you don't keep it private, then you have to be very selective on who you're allowing to come into your inner sanctuary, I guess, is the right way to put it. That's how I think of it.
I've had people come to the house to pick up animals and pick up cages, and there was a few times where I had these old ratty cages that I listed up on Craigslist, and I got some less than savory people who luckily did not like the size of my dog when they showed up, so I felt a little bit better about that. But it's like, you know, you do run that risk, and I know that there are several people who I know of who sell things and refuse to meet the people at the house. They'll meet them at, like, the Wawa down the street or something like that, which is that something else to do? Do you maybe meet them off-site a few times and then invite them back to your place?
Yeah,
do
I think that's
you mount
kinda
shotguns on the wall in your snake room to show them that if they come here uninvited, they're going to get a hole in their chest? I mean, you know, there's various things you can do. And this place had surveillance cameras. I mean, they're already better than me. I don't have surveillance cameras. So,
yeah, well, I believe it was a storefront, so, I mean, that's kind of a little bit different than your house, but still, all in all, I mean, there's just precautions.
Well, the only difference between my house and the storefront is when they break into my house, they're not just stealing my snakes, they're going to make off with my TV and a few other things, too. So,
right. Yeah, but if you have somebody that you are bringing in specifically, you know what I mean? Like, they're specifically coming in to hit you for that's, you know, just like they did there. They went in for specific animals, you know, pyretic, and I'm out, you know, that kind of thing. So, anyway, it's just something that you should think about if you're going away, or you have to be very selective. I think my advice would be to be very selective on who you're inviting in and showing, you know, your collection, especially if you have higher-end animals, whether it be, you know, carpet pythons, or whether it be, you know, rare species of things, you know, whatever it is, should just be very, very careful. So,
right, and, you know, we of course we wish the best of luck to the people who, you know, got their animals stolen. We hope that they can recover most, if not all of them. I hear that they recovered one leopard gecko who they thought was stolen, but it turns out she was just set loose in the snake room. So she has been recovered, but, you know, I know it's a small victory, and hopefully that the dumbass who took him is just that effing stupid that he posts up a classified somewhere trying to sell the shit and gets nabbed.
Yeah, I mean, like, people like that should be run out of the hobby type of thing. So, I mean, the guy's name...
People like that should be tarred, feathered, and burned.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
His name is Jonathan McMillan. And his business is Reptile Passion. So if you go over on Facebook and look up Reptile Passions, I think you'll be able to find the video and whatnot of what we're talking about. And if you know, they're offering a reward. Right, they're offering a reward and stuff. So if you have any info or anything, you know, help those guys out. The other thing I wanted to hit on real quick, because I want to make sure that we start talking some scrub and
white lip. People got mad at us. So.
Yeah. U.S. ARC, you know, they announced that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife have reopened the comment period on the proposal to list as injurious under the Lacey Act five species of constrictor snakes that were not included in the 2012 when they put the Burmese python and a couple others. Specifically, we're talking about reticulated pythons, the Chauncey's anaconda, green anaconda, and the Benny anaconda, which I never heard of those. And then, of course,
well,
the boa constrictor.
This is what I don't understand. Those other two types of anaconda, I think there might be one in the country. I don't know. But
yeah, it doesn't.
Dude, I'm not even sure if there's one. I think they're just looking at names of things and how big they get and calling it a day.
Right.
Then why is it? I'm not even going to give them the option. Olive pythons should not be listed. Yeah.
So
never mind.
I guess if you're looking at size, though, you're looking at a green anaconda and a boa constrictor. There's a little bit of a difference. And don't forget
they're looking at popularity as well. I mean, boa constrictor is because everybody has a boa, or everybody could have a boa, or shit. I don't know.
Right. So, you know, it's kind of like they did before. They're opening up where you can make a comment. You know, remember to keep your comments professional. You know, we're not trying to look like idiots or, you know, anything like that, because I'm sure that doesn't help our case at all.
Be gentle.
It will be evaluated by Fish and Wildlife. They've been finalized the rule and may list some or all or none of the five species. I know USARC is preparing detailed comments on the economic, social, conservation, legal, and scientific issues relating to the proposed listing. At this time, everyone should send the first round of comments requesting an extension of the comment period, because obviously they kept it kind of short. They only allowed 30 days, which isn't really enough time to get it going. So I think the first thing that you have to do is head over to usarc.org, and you can check out on their page there. I linked it up in Morelia Python Radio Facebook page and the Twitter. You can just link it out there, and it will show you, put your comments in, ask for the extension, and put your comments in on your thoughts of, why they shouldn't be listed, those five species shouldn't be listed to the Lacey Act. And don't forget, keep it civil. So, on the other thing I wanted to mention real quick is the RACA raffle. And basically, this raffle is you can go and check it out at RACA. It's RAACA.net. And they're giving away a pretty cool prize. It's about $35,000 in prizes. And it's all kinds of different species of animals and breeding equipment and racks and all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, even if you were just looking for the racks and you're not necessarily into hognose snakes or, you know, I know there's ball pythons and hognose and corn snakes and rat snakes. You know, go check it out, and I think it's $20 a ticket, but the raffle ends on the 4th of July, and that's going to the Reptile Relief Fund, and that's everything that they raise from there goes straight to that fund. It doesn't get used for anything else, so you know that that's going for your rights, fighting for your rights for that. So go over, check it out, RAACA.net. Two more things. Don't forget the Northwest Carpet Fest is coming up. I forgot how quick that is. That's on 7/28.
I know.
That's a couple weeks away. I know that over on their Facebook page, it's NW Carpet Fest, you can see that they're looking for donations for the raffle, and they're doing the same thing that we did where they do the 50-50 split. I think that certain people may be given to one and all to one and not the other, however it works out. But, definitely if you want to, give something to them, you can contact, Heather or get on that Facebook page and let them know what you have. So that's that. And then the last thing I have before we get that, did you see the Paradox Super Zebra that Nick hatched out?
So happy because he's been, like, dying to have something funky and first of its kind and new to pop out of his eggs. I mean, he always says, like, he told me once, he's like, listen, I've seen people, like, their first time, they're breeding, get, like, five new things out of an egg, and it's random. And he's like, I've hatched, like,
thousands upon thousands of babies. When's it going to be my turn? So it was really cool to see that, and it looks awesome. I can't wait for it to color up. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It's a chimera, and, you know, it's not – obviously it's not genetic, but, man, it sure does – tickle your inner herp nerd if that was in my clutch hatching out, you know. So
I'm pretty sure you find the holdback immediately at that point. So
yeah. I would be excited watching that thing grow up, like you said, and seeing how it turns out. And you know, the whole time you got a super zebra, so it's pretty cool. So
see, now that's the funny thing is the genetics of it, because you said if both the parts of the chimera were both male, you could have a viable male that could potentially breed. Now, what would happen if I crossed him with, you know, would the genetics be that of a super zebra or a zebra or both? I mean, what are we looking at here?
I think when it comes to chimeras, I think that it basically depends. I think what's happening is, and I'm going to butcher this, but I think what's happening is basically you have an animal that's showing phenotype of both morphs, right? And
yes.
Part of it is shown in different parts of the body. And hearing Nick talk about this before, it really comes down to what the genitals are, what part they are. So they could be zebra or they could be super zebra. The only way to really know would be to breed it, you know? So,
yeah,
luckily
and if
it's the male.
It's the boy, so, yeah, we won't have to wait too long.
And, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's an even split between the two, and it's pretty cool to see. So, congrats to him. So white-lip python scrubs. You know, there was a couple of cool things that you guys talked about. I think one of the coolest things I heard was, what do you price something at that doesn't exist? And
I knew you'd like that.
Yeah, it's something that I struggle with because, I mean, you guys were talking about Halmahera scrubs, and, you know, that's something that hopefully one day I have success with. And I really liked your answer, Chris, on you know, making sure that somebody that's going to be successful with the project is – you know, not necessarily is always the one with the right amount of money for the project and getting that in the right people's hands.
Exactly. Because I guess it depends, you know, what kind of breeder or what kind of person you are. But for me, the project is going to come before the money. So they're going to go where I want them to go, you know, regardless of what that price is. So if it's, you know, I don't know, Eric, you know, I breed the Halmaharas and I want Owen and Eric to have them. You know, if I want to charge $5,000 for them and they don't want to pay $5,000, well, I'm going to find a way for you to have them at this point because that's what matters to me. It's not the $5,000 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess when it comes to those type of projects, you kind of have people that I think you probably develop closer relationships with. I know that you guys hit on David Means a couple of times. And, you know, you develop these relationships with these people. And I think you know that David would be successful with this project. So you have no problem, you know, giving it to him and you know, hoping for the best type of thing. Or if you did hatch out Halmaharas or Moluccans or whatever the case may be, you know, if he doesn't necessarily have the funds to get into that project, you know, it would be kind of like I consider like the Halmahera circle. There's a few of us that have them and work with them, and it's kind of like I think that if I'm kind of the same way as you, Chris. If I knew that that I hatched them out, obviously I would have some that I was going to hold back. But it's kind of like, to me, getting the species out there and getting them established in captivity is more important than, you know, getting $6,000 a pair or whatever, whatever kind of crazy price you would come up with, you know, because obviously I think, I mean, look at rough scale pythons, look at how fast they're coming down and, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know. I'm kind of with you there about, you know, pricing and it's a shame that, like you guys said that, and we've said this before, is like you have projects where you know that this species, if this species went with this person, it would probably be successful. I think Bolens is an example of that. I think there's people out there that would, which, by the way, Owen.
Yes.
What's with the whole Bolens, you know, not a fan of type of thing?
The Bolens, the non-Bolens love? I was waiting for it.
Yeah.
Well, the non-Bolens love comes from a strict business sense of,
well,
I need pages to be filled with things.
Let me try to defend your non-Bolens love, because I
go
think
on.
I think I know where you're coming from, but I know you know what you meant and how people probably took it. It's not that you don't like Bolens. It's not that you wouldn't want to work
love
with Bolens.
The looks of Bolens, the look of a Bolens, the feel of a Bolens, they look gorgeous. They got the big head of a scrub, but it's not as pointed. It's like a brick. The one that Josh Easter brought, ICAST, was gorgeous, and it would be great to have it in a big cage with a bunch of climbing stuff and some plants and all that. It would look awesome up there. Do I need
yeah,
to have...
We just took it and ran a mile because it's Owen.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. So, but
so
do I need to have...
What he's saying, Chris, is that if you get some corn snakes over at your place, you'll be able to have Bolens as well.
I've threatened dropping off like 50 pounds of colubrid and being like three teeth. So it's not beyond me.
Yeah.
As long as I produce something, I can have all the other stuff that doesn't breed.
And that is the thing. I said, I'm like, get me eggs this year. And he's like, then I can do what I want. I'm like, you can do whatever the hell you want. Get me eggs from something this year. I don't care what it is. So, you know, of course, the some things that we're talking about are, you know, Tanabars, Malukans, White Lips. That's it, right? Just those three?
Yeah.
So just like that. Yeah. So if you get one of those, screw it. Get your Bolens. Have your fun. So it's one of those things where it's not really conducive for us by means of the price tag per animal, as well as just how rare it is to produce them. Now, I know there have been leaps and bounds and strides, and I believe this is the first year in a row they've had back-to-back clutches at one place. So, yeah, and it's two clutches this year. So,
well, there's been three clutches, I think.
Yeah,
actually, two of them were back-to-back.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. So there's definite hope, and I imagine that the captive breads will eventually start spreading all over the place, and then, you know, they'll start being easier and easier to breed. Not too easy, but, yeah, then maybe we'll take a shot at them. But for right now, draw my little line in the sand. So
I'm curious to hear Chris's thoughts on this, and now we'll get into some white lip python talk. I keep derailing
before we go that far. I've decided to offer you a second option if you're still not willing to buy us oxibles.
Okay.
Buy us
I'll cut the price in fifths, and you can buy us a pair of ring pythons that Tom's about to hatch.
Ring pythons. There we go.
Speaking of ring pythons, we're going to be having we have actually two breeders this month coming on the show. That have bred ring pythons this year, and have been successful with it. One is go ahead.
So you're torturing me is what you're telling me.
Well, I got to be honest. You know, I know you guys have had ring pythons, and I know that we've been talking about the past couple months, like different species of pythons and working with all different kinds. But the rings are kind of like they do it for me. I really dig them. I don't know why. I really like them, and I really like to work with them. So I know that you know, I know that you guys are looking at getting back into them, but this has been sign of a kind of a thing for me that I really am like, I don't know, I just dig them, man. I don't know what it's like to work with them, or, you know, I've heard some crazy stories about them female eating males and all kinds of crazy stuff.
And that
but...
makes you want them more. That's the problem.
Yeah, yep. I think ours acted like little miniature versions of our white lips, which was kind of cool. So,
who are the two people?
We have Chris from Mystic Exotics or Mystic Reptiles.
I assume that was one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we have Dan Patterson from Canada. He's coming back. He was a great...
Cool.
That guy was super cool. I don't know if you remember that show, Owen, but he's worked with all types of pythons. I know he has a lot of...
The shows
of
kind of blend together.
Yeah, he has a lot of ball pythons, and he has a lot of carpet pythons. But he's worked with, you know, he's worked with rings, he's worked with womas, he's worked with blackheads, he's worked with, I think there's Angolans, he's worked with pretty much any type of species. I don't know if he's really done anything with scrubs per se, but, you know, that's kind of where it's at. So I'm excited to talk to those guys specifically about, you know, those kind of oddball type of pythons, you know.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah. So with that being said, I know that, you know, I guess really, I don't know if you had some thoughts this year as far as breeding white lip pythons, of maybe something that you could do different, or something that you are going to try to tweak for next year, or you're going to try to just keep going with what you guys were doing and the white lip project.
I think there's two specific things that we're going to try and do different this year. And one is, I think the way that we had them set up last year, I think we, based on where they were, we struggled to get them cold enough. And I struggle with this all the time, and I feel like we talk about this, you know, every time it comes up, is, you know, the natural habitat of what's being reported versus what they're actually finding when they're in the field. It's weird to get this cold because it doesn't seem like it gets this cold there, but I've just seen so many successes that spur almost immediate action from quick drops.
Okay.
I know that, you know, there's a bunch of different ways. You know, I, you know, sent a congrats out to Steve Tillis the last time that we were on the air, and it seemed like he just kind of kept it in, you know, kept it in racks and kind of ran an ambient, and it just kind of worked out for him. It doesn't even seem like he did it on purpose. So there certainly seems to be a lot of different ways to do it, and that's probably determines a lot on how well acclimated your animals are and, you know, what works for them as individuals, I guess. But the plan for me, I do think, will be for some colder temperatures, and I'm still going to – I do want to get into the rack talk, and I assume that since I sparked that when we were chatting the other day, that that's going to come up. But I do still plan to stick with the cages that I have, one, because I don't have big enough racks, and two, these do seem to work pretty well. I do keep them covered because these guys are pretty sensitive. But I've kind of been messing around with the substrate, and I plan to do kind of a mixture of mulch, either like mulch and dirt, or maybe even mulch and moss, to create the ability for them to den a little bit, which I think will allow them to be a little more secretive, which they naturally are. So I think the combination of those two might help us out a little bit more this year.
So, the whole idea of the rack. I mean, I know we talked about this at Owen's a couple weeks ago, but my personal opinion is that I don't think that pythons of any type are difficult to breed in captivity. I think that they want to breed because that's how their drive. As far as their instinct, I think that they don't do it because they don't feel secure in the environment that they're in.
Yeah, something's off.
I know. I get a lot of heat for the whole thing of keeping a reptile in a rack. But my honest opinion is that when you keep a reptile in a cage, I believe that's more for the keeper than the cat, because you want to see it, you want to visualize it. You know, you just bought this reptile and it's cool. I don't know if that's necessarily true for more established type of species. I think that you can definitely keep them in cages and stuff. And I'm not saying that you can't keep them in cages. I just think my personal opinion is that for the female to feel secure enough to lay, I think that that rack provides that extra protection, that extra sense of security, that extra sense of, wow, this is a good spot for me to lay the eggs. I think that maybe with your approach with the mulch, for the female being able to burrow, I don't know. And again, I don't really know that much about white lip pythons and what they do in the wild as far as what they do when they actually lay eggs, or who knows if anybody really knows.
They normally den around the roots of trees.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of them are found, is they, you go around and you find these, the roots, what they'll do is they'll kind of dig in with their nose, then they'll kind of spin around and kick all the dirt out. So that's where they got this burrow that's right at the base of this tree. And you can find two, maybe three white lips all in that one little area. And that's apparently where they sit, they breed, then the female kicks the males out, and then she's got that whole place, and that's where she'll lay her eggs.
Right.
So that is what we're trying to do. And we know some breeders over in Europe have actually built burrows out of those terracotta pots and stuff for their white lips to go into, and they don't even see their females. They just, for like several months out of the year, the female disappears into this burrow, the male go in, and you don't ever see them. And then all of a sudden the male shows back up again, and now you know it's time, you pull the male out, and then about 60 days later, you see little baby white lips crawling out of the top of the thing. So that's what they go, and I think it's what we're kind of trying to lean towards here a little bit, but at least the best we can. But I believe you're right with some higher-strung animals, they don't want to see you. And seeing you upsets them, so, covers the cages, and that helps.
The only thing that I see a little bit that brings some heat on Eric is the natural assumption that you're probably not providing them enough space in a rack, which I don't buy, but there's been a stereotype that's been completed by that, because you go online and you see pictures, you know, of a 6-foot snake in a 32-foot rack, because that's how you picture a rack system.
Yeah, you're right. And I think I was showing you that there's rack systems that Ben Russo uses.
They're huge now.
They're huge.
It's insane what they have. And if I was in more of a position to accommodate that and even replace what I have, I would give it a shot, because I really support the idea that the cage is more for the keeper. The only question that it brings, and I don't know how I feel about this one way or another, is do you have any feeling towards the life cycle, and what do you think the ability to provide that is in a rack?
Well,
it would be the same as a cage. You got one window there, even more so. If you get one of those open-air racks, that's clear plastic on all sides, whereas a cage, you got one window. So think of a light, unless you have a light in the cage. So.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that I guess it
I just run on the cycle of the room light, so you very well probably could get it through the bins and whatnot as well. It just seems a little different still.
I kind of have mixed feelings on that. I mean, part of me thinks that, you know, when you're dealing with species of animals that are relying on the sun for their, you know, their body temperature and warming up, and I would imagine that their that they're cued into that. But in the same sense, do you think that that's more of a feeling than it is naturally just knowing, seeing light or not yeah. light? What I mean by that is if you're in your house, don't you know whether it's nighttime or daytime without
yeah,
looking
I mean,
out a window?
Yeah, the snakes are conducive to that stuff. They know when the sun's up, they know when it's not, and all that other fun stuff. But when it comes to, so they're able to know that. You don't necessarily have to worry about the light cycle. They know when it's sunlight, and then they find a hot spot, and then that's where they sit. So it's almost like you're tricking them. So
yeah, and
know what's
to
going
be honest,
on.
I don't know how much a lot of this endo stuff that we work with really gets exposed to the sun. If it's sitting in a tree that's covered by tree cover because it's probably not on the top branch, or it's at the base of a tree, which is also in the shade in the forest at this point. So I don't know how much of that they're really exposed to anyway, other than auxiliary light, which they would still receive in Iraq.
Yes,
yeah.
I would agree with that. You know, I mean, if you have light coming into your room, I think, I think that's enough for my own opinion. I don't think that a light cycle is going to make or break you.
I don't think so either, but
go ahead.
I think that you have to show them pictures of the moon and its cycles so they know what cycle the phase of the moon is in order for them to get the proper breeding cycle through. So just
and if that doesn't work, then you have to play
snake.
Music.
Yeah, oh, there you go. The sounds of waves crashing on rocks and stuff.
Yeah, you guys are jerks. Anyway, I think that if I personally kept white pythons, when I talked to Steve, one of the things that he had stated that he was he does the sort of the ambient temperature type of approach, and I know that he did one thing that I tried this year, and I had a whole lot of success. Is that right when you notice follicular growth, you feed your female?
I actually did that this year too, just because I wasn't seeing that much breeding action with my females, so I decided to feed them a small meal, and every single female that I fed, well, I'm like, I just ruined it. They're never going to breed now. Is either had eggs or is gravid right now.
Yes.
So it's like son of a bitch.
I personally, you look at all these different people and all their different, you have this person that does it this way and this person that does it that way. I provide a light cycle. I provide heat. I have ambient heat. I have a hot spot. I have this. I have, all these different things, and they're all having success. I guess my personal opinion with that and why they're seeing that is it really comes down to one thing. And the one thing is that I believe that people do not give their females enough time to become sexually mature. And here's the key word, and acclimated to captivity, especially when you're dealing with these, wild caught or captive hatched animals. You know, they think it's going to breed like a ball python or a Burmese python or whatever, or even a carpet python. You know, I'm going to grow this thing up 2.5 years, boom, I'm going to breed it. The male only has to be, 500 grams, and I'm going to put it to it and it's going to go. Well, the reason that works with those species is because they're established in captivity. You know, they're already acclimated what's going on, and especially, and you were talking about earlier how this is the first year that you're breeding your animals,
Yes.
I would bet you that you're going to have that clutch will probably be the most successful out of your bunch simply because those animals are something that you produced, and they're used to your environment. They're used to
the
temperature
fluctuation. They have been raised the whole thing.
Exactly.
They have been, Echo's been here since birth and hatching, so it's like, he knows the innings and the score of whatever's going on, and it makes it a hell of a lot easier.
And when you start to get a few seasons under your belt, with breeding, I think you start to develop a cycle. And I think what happens, and I think Ryan hit on this on a couple shows back, is that you might not have success the first year, maybe not even success the first 2 years. That's why you see a lot of these people that get adult females that were proven, and then they don't go for a couple years until they're acclimated to the new environment. I think that that they just don't – they need to – it may take a season. It may take 2 seasons. But once they get into the swing of what's going on in the environment, in your environment that you're providing in, the reptile room, or whether that's your basement, your spare bedroom, or if you have a facility, whatever the thing is, as soon as it's geared in, I think it's gonna you're going to have success breeding that animal, you know. You just have to time it right, you know.
Right. He's got to be conducive to what you're doing. I mean, Ryan said it was about the idea of getting her synced to what he was doing and getting everything timed out perfect. So.
Yeah. I don't know.
I've seen a lot more success with the feeding cycles than I thought I would. So I think you might have hit something on the head there that's been working more recently.
Yeah, I've seen that with a couple different species this year. I've seen it a lot with a couple carpet. I know I did it. Owen did it. Zach did it. I even think Jason Balin did it. Nick doesn't do that, and he kind of told me not to do that. And he had some good suggestions why. He thought that, you know, the female, you don't want food to be digesting in the system, and then when she goes to lay eggs, if the shit gets on the eggs and da-da-da-da-da, because, you know, it's natural for the female to let go of everything when she's, you know, laying eggs, and, which makes sense, but that's why you're not going to feed her a jumbo rat. You know, I fed
her. Yeah, I would say very small meals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you always
see
the
size
of
some of these white lip eggs. Jeez.
Oh, yeah, they're huge. But, I mean, you've also seen the people who feed their females while they're sitting on eggs. So that's something else that, you know, she could take a crap on the eggs. I mean, hopefully she's a better mother than that. So,
well, I guess when you got to go, you got to go. What are you going to do?
Well, I mean, like, Carmen right now is doing the maternal incubation downstairs. I'll pause now for all of everybody to gasp.
Yeah, right.
All right. Everybody good? All right. So, and the thing is, she laid her eggs, and she also pooped in her cage at the same time. So I took the hide box and I kind of slid her to one side of the cage, cleaned that side of the cage, made it all really nice and pretty, slid her back onto the paper on that side of the cage, and then cleaned the other side, and then that was it. Moved on. She didn't do anything.
What Owen actually did, he took about 32 pictures of her in different places, and then he pulled the eggs just so you could see what you're doing.
I ripped them eggs out of there, and then when they're hatching, I'm going to throw her next to them, and then everyone's going to shut the hell up.
That's great. So, getting back to white-lipped python, one of the things that I have a question for you guys is, and, you know, if you're going to get, you know, I know that there's a couple people that produce them. If you're going to get a captive born baby and you're going to get in on the white lip project, you know, what's your setup? I know we talked to Blake a long time ago about white lip pythons, and he was saying about how they dehydrate really quick. Can't have an empty water bowl, that kind of thing, whereas, like, other species, they may be more forgiven. What's your thoughts on that, guys?
Yeah, they don't hold water for anything. And I know people that have killed numbers of babies just by letting their water run out for a period of time. I would say that I still keep them, you know, pretty basic. I use pretty small cages because they're nervous animals, and they kind of like having their surroundings. I like to do moss hide boxes because, to me, that ensures that I can keep the humidity up. You just need to be careful because they're also very, very susceptible to any amount of bacteria, and that can get them sick very quickly, and the babies are pretty hard to bring back if they do get sick.
Mm-hmm.
So you really just need to keep an eye on that stuff. Other than that, I still keep them pretty basic, and I really, as much as I like to handle my stuff, probably more than some other people do, I really don't mess with my babies until they're, you know, really, really sound eaters. So I really just leave them alone.
Okay.
Yeah, and they will, even an adult white lip will soak for a good amount of time if you give them the bin big enough to soak in. I mean, there are several pictures that we have of our adult black phases where the only thing that's visible above the waterline is like their nostrils, because they'll just stay there for days because that's really what they like. And you know, it's like Chris said, they can dehydrate quick, but having a full big bin of water, they kind of just take care of themselves, really.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, they enjoy the water. Also, they if their humidity is off even just like a little bit, you know, you're going to get really bad rough sheds. I mean, the white lips went from being on mulch over at Chris's to being on paper over here, and I had to pretty much assist shed every single one of them just because it was just stuck and ripped and terrible. And it was all just I couldn't get their stuff dialed in correctly. They go back over to Chris's, they go back up on mulch, and everybody's shedding fine, apparently. So.
Huh.
Yeah, I spray stuff a lot, too, though. I have, like, I use a pump plant sprayer to go through and hit all the cages, because the mulch is really effective, but then as soon as the mulch dries out, it's even drier than keeping stuff on newspaper.
True.
You know, funny, though, I bring this up every time we talk about breeding, and I didn't mention it this time, and I have nothing whatsoever that points to this being important for breeding white lips, but I've just had success with it with everything else that I've bred, whether it's incidental or actually true, but doing, like, a significant wet season or humidity cycle seems to have had an impact in just about everything else that I've worked with, and while I haven't really seen anybody do that, I'm still going to give it a shot anyway just to see if it prompts anything.
That's interesting. I guess I don't know. I've never really focused on humidity when it comes to pythons. But
I mean, to tell you the truth, at the end of the day, I think that we're all overthinking everything, and I don't even think I need to do half of the shit that we're talking about.
Right.
but
we got to find what works for us, and once we find what works for us,
but none of it's necessarily wrong. The only kick in the ass that I'm going to have is if it does work, okay, well, what the hell did actually work?
Yeah.
Well, when we get baby this year, we'll come on the show next year, and you'll say, okay, what was the secret? And I'm going to say, okay, I got 16 different things.
Right.
That it could have been. Yeah.
And you don't know which one it is. I really think it keeps going back to that whole thing of that female feeling.
And then Steve's at home laughing at us because he's sitting on his couch watching TV while his white lips are breeding and laying eggs.
Good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And then Tom's at home laughing even harder because he's watching TV and 18 of his pythons are laying eggs. And then Ryan Young's doing the same thing too. And I'm just pissed off at all three of you guys.
But if you look at those guys, again, I keep thinking that they've been doing it for quite a while, and those females are confident in their environment. I think that that's why they have
success. And I totally buy into that because I don't think that any of these guys went and picked up their adults at a show last week, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things that I was going to talk to you guys about. When you're dealing with white-lipped pythons, scrub pythons, what's your thoughts on picking up adults? I think I've come to the conclusion that I'm going to have a policy, unless there's some kind of – I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule. But for me personally, I'm not going with adults anymore.
I second that 100% because even if they transition well, they're still not, you know, I'm probably taking the words out of your mouth just because we've had this conversation, but they're still not on your routine.
Right. Mm-hmm. I've had three females this year that I purchased as adults, and all three of them got RIs.
Yep.
And I find it strange that none of the other ones got it. I mean, it's not like they're different temperatures, or the only thing I can think of is that they're stressed.
It could be several things. It's one of those things where we're, you know, we've kind of started shying away from the idea of picking up adults as well. I mean, we always thought that grab the adult, maybe you get lucky, get a clutch. All right, cool. But, you know, we're probably going to end up selling our pair of adult Savus just to pick up a pair of babies and raise them up, just because I think it's going to work better that way. So.
Well, you know, Eric, when you take your adults and you bring them home and you put them in a bin on the floor and don't ever give them any heat, that's likely to make them sick too.
Well,
yeah, they need that.
I don't do that, but
no, I'm kidding. But look, even just, you know, just a few moves that I've had, I've seen it where, you know, they're all my adults. I care for them the same way, but there's enough things that have been tweaked.
Right.
That,
yeah,
I find that I'm kind of reacclimating animals again, and it kind of makes me nervous that it's going to end up impacting my seasons when I keep, you know, moving for work and trying to readjust.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you got a point there, because I think you're going to find that you're going to have to reestablish them again. I mean, I know that you're not moving that far, you know. But still.
But no room is the same. We've already established this. And it's the thing is that what I've noticed is that we've had projects where we've gotten adult animals and something goes sideways, and now we have to readjust. You know, there are vet bills. There's possibly potentially an animal dying, and you're back to square one. By the time you fix the project and maybe get even close to it being a project that you can now reap the benefits of, if you had just bought the babies, you're almost to the point where you could be breeding the babies now. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, I would err on the side of, if it's a project that you really want to do and it's a project that you can really, you really want to get your full might behind and be successful at, get the babies, raise them up, do it that way.
Right. Right. You know, unfortunately, we're in a market where, depending what it is, you know, like you had kind of touched on earlier, there's going to be that unique animal where you're going to jump on the adult because that's kind of your only option. But
true.
You know, even like the first black white lips that I remember the Barker saying that they bred, they were actually imported adults, but you know, they were 5 or 6 years old when they were imported, but it took them another 6 years to acclimate. So it's the same thing as raising babies at that point.
Right. Well,
yeah.
And then there's the other thing of, like, if you look at even our guys, the Malukin project, we have Kazi, Blaze, and Hazel. And I always keep saying that the best bet we're ever going to have is when Blaze and Hazel are old enough. I also have that other boy. What the hell is his name?
Well, I don't know. I don't know half the shit you name.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why I'm asking you. I just look online anyway, but I always keep saying that Blaze and Hazel are going to be the ones that are going to end up breeding for us, because they're the calmer, the nicer, and we've raised them from ugly little red babies. So that is always, I say, is going to be our best bet.
Right.
So.
Okay.
That,
so
everyone loves Hazel.
Yeah, right.
But you're still going to try.
Right. I think that if the – what's your thoughts on this? I don't think that they have to be quite as big as we think they have to be to breed.
I totally freaking agree. I mean,
yeah, I'm noticing that. It was not just with scrubs or wet lips, but with a lot of animals. I would have – I bred a carpet this year that 2 years ago I would have been like, she's way too damn small, but 16 good eggs tells me I'm totally wrong. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at at Facebook right now, and Tom just got his second clutch of rings, and this female looks like it's barely a sub adult.
Yeah.
What was it?
I saw that. Yeah.
Didn't Todd and Carrie have a bunch of females, the two or three females this year that just had eggs that they always thought were, that they were, they're like, these, we thought these girls were too small, but boom, eggs. So.
And then David was telling me a story that Cam had brought in a muck and the laid eggs, and everybody was kind of in awe because they're looking at this tiny, tiny Moluccan, like, I can't believe that an egg came out of this animal.
Yeah.
And and they were fantastic babies. So it's, you know, maybe that's what it is. I mean, Mike Bell had some good success with a really big Moluccan, I think, if I have the female right. So I guess you get some luck with both, but I just don't know that it's necessary with some of the success we've seen in the small ones.
Now, if it's not necessary to get them that large, do you not do it just because now you've saved on cage space and food bill and everything else like that? I mean, if you can get the job done while keeping them relatively small, why get them that big?
Yes and no. I just think that I don't really have a goal one way or the other outside of just keeping them lean and at a healthy weight. And if they get length and mass that is still considered lean, then, you know, by all means keep growing. But I don't have it, you know, I don't need its skin. I don't need its scales to fold over when it goes into a ball because it's fat at this point.
Yeah, you definitely hate that look.
So does the scrub size, you keep it in line with your white-lip python size, like as far as that goes, body type?
Well,
to me, the white-lips by nature just seem to carry a little bit more bulk than the scrub. I think it's a little easier to keep the scrubs leaner. And from the majority of success that I've seen with anybody with scrubs, it seems that keeping them very lean has been part of the key to it. It seems like if scrubs are even minutely overweight, they don't seem to have a chance.
It's the whole body type for a scrub is the big freaking head and then almost skinny as a whip kind of neck and body. They're supposed to have that thinner kind of build to them. And, you know, of course, if they do get larger, you do get a little bit of thickness. But the white lips seem to, like Chris said, they're thicker-bodied snakes. I mean, they themselves have pretty massively big heads, but it's a little bit different than the scrubs. And that just comes with diet. I mean, I know that Chris feeds, I think, either smaller meals or he feeds every there's large breaks between the meals. When they were over here, I fed them a diet of primarily bird, which, you know, kept them a little bit on the leaner side. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. It's the people who are feeding, like, full-grown guinea pigs to their scrub pythons are the ones that are going to end up getting fat scrubs. So
I don't know that this does anything or doesn't. I'm certainly not claiming that it does, but I think I just do it for the hell of it. I think of the natural side of them being opportunistic predators where they're going to get whatever they can get their mouth on. You know, so I might feed, you know, a chick this week. I might do a large rat 2 weeks from now. I might do a small rat 2 weeks from that. I might go back to a chick. I'll feed it a gerbil if I have them. I don't. I kind of like the variation of it, and I don't always say, okay, it's Saturday at 2:30. It's feeding time. It's kind of like it's feeding time because I feel like feeding now, whether it was this, you know, Saturday, Wednesday, this week, next week.
Now, are you doing that because, like, okay, so there's two trains of thought. There's one that you do that because you're just preoccupied and it sounds good when you're, you know what I mean? It sounds better than, well, I didn't pay attention to my snakes for the past couple of weeks and now I'm going to feed them. Or is it like you're specifically, you look at the animal or, you know, I think Ryan had a good idea of that. And he put it into good words so that people can understand it, is he's watching the animal. So basically, if a snake is content and fed, it's going to sort of sit there. I think he was talking with this with chondros. And then
yeah, he said the chondros got to move around a lot, and that's when he knows that they're ready for food.
And it had nothing to do with prey size or anything like that. Like, you know, it just had to do with simply the fact that, you know, okay, they're moving around the cage, so I'm going to feed them. And then they stop moving around the cage. And then, you know, they're moving around again, and, you know, then it's time to
More or less, I agree with that. The only way that doesn't really work with scrubs is because you can feed a scrub until it's ready to explode, and it's still going to move around looking for food.
They do kind of cruise a lot.
Yeah.
So.
But in regards to that actual question, though, and I'm very, like, OCD on paper, and I'm very organized into a schedule, so for me it's hard to not have that, okay, I'm going to go feed Saturday at 2 o'clock, but I try to vary it up and just kind of work over a longer-term range than a shorter one, and, you know, if I had more patience, I would monitor the weights of my animals, which I don't do, but I find that to be an interesting topic of its own, but I just kind of, you know, eyeball the animal and how it's responding to that food and how it's weighted and just continue to go on from there.
Okay, interesting. So as far as, you know, you're mixing up the diet and whatnot, and we talked about care. One of the things that you guys said you wanted to talk about was first aid. And jokingly, I said, is that for the keeper or the kept? And, you know, you guys said
kind of. We both responded with yes.
So let's hear your thoughts on that.
Well, obviously, we had a couple of issues with our blackface this year, as we've talked about a few times. We had our one female, Celine, and our one male, Cole, decide that they were really fed up with each other. They've been in a cage with each other for, I think it was almost 2 weeks at this point. They just decided they had had enough and bit-wrapped each other and actually did a little bit of damage. Celine almost lost her eye, but I think it's actually healed up nicely, and she's able to use it now. But for a while there, it was getting pretty sketchy. And Cole, I thought he broke a rib, but it seems to have healed right. But the both of them had large slashes from teeth down each other's necks, backs, and head. So it was one of those things where you kind of got to be at the ready.
Yeah,
you're kind of right there.
Thank God they don't tend to eat each other, but you really do need to watch.
They fuck each other up. So it was one of those things where it happened at 5:40 in the morning, and the whitelets were in my bedroom, so I heard it. It hadn't actually woke me up. It's one of those that if they had been in the snake room downstairs, I would have never heard it and probably just found the aftermath or one dead whitelet. But it's one of those things where you got to watch them, and it was good to have stuff on hand. I mean, I've been a chew toy for various animals in my career, so I kind of know what to do with animal bites. So having things like betadine on hand is ready to go, so that was good to just dab around the slashes and keep them clean, which, of course, was a little difficult being that they were snakes and trying to burrow in their mulch and soak in their water and all that other stuff. So it was, I think it was twice a day, maybe three times a day, I had to haul their asses out and clean out the wounds, make sure nothing was getting puffy or inflamed, and then dab some betadine around it just to keep it clean. And they healed up pretty nice, and they look like wild. The one looks like a wild caught now because he's got bite scars on him. So, than that, it was pretty good. And our one other female, the gold female, looks like she got tattooed from a boy before we even got her.
Yeah, she's got a small kink in her neck, and it looks like something had grabbed a hold of her at some point. And she's a proven female, actually, so I don't know if...
Well, you know, it's the kink in her neck, and then there's a perfect U-shaped scar around the kink in her neck, so it kind of could only be a few things there. But she is proven, so breeding these guys can turn ugly. So it's one of those... You got to watch. I've put them right up there with blackheads where, you know, do so at own peril and expect that maybe they're going to decide that they don't like each other, and that's something now that you have to deal with. If you don't have compatible pairs, they could decide that death needs to happen. I mean, what is it? King Cobra. If a King Cobra male finds a King Cobra female and tries to court her and she doesn't want to breed, he just kills her. So it's one of those things. It's almost like that in my mind, where if one of them really isn't in the mood, rather than just kind of trying to run away like a carpet python or some other things, they're just going to fight it out. So,
yep.
And that's kind of how it goes.
That's interesting. So
yeah, well, my thing is, I would much rather have them chew on me than on each other. So if I, that's why it's like they were fighting each other, I kind of stuck my hands right in the middle of it, because I'm like, all right, just sink teeth into me rather than each other, please. Don't hurt each other. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So that you find them, I get. Well, let me ask you this question. So you want to get into white lip pythons, right? And you go and you pick up a pair. I mean, what?
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's no guarantee that they're going to be compatible. I mean, is there any kind of tips or suggestions on, like, if you're picking up a pair, do you look at two animals that are kind of, like, sitting together in a clutch? Or, like, what's your thoughts behind that?
Well, if they're young, as babies, I think you could possibly, you know, have them almost raised side by side and they will be somewhat compatible. Maybe even in the same cage for a little bit. But if you're picking up older ones, and, yeah, you always want the ones that are cuddled up to each other. If it's a male-female and they're sitting on the same side of the cage or even eat with each other, which is why but even that can be misleading, because Celine and Cole the day before were curled up in the burrow together, and I thought that maybe we were going to get lucky, and then the next day they were killing each other. So it's one of those, and they seem to have very short memories, where if I was transferring for cleaning, if I was transferring them out of the cage and then putting them back in, they almost forgot that there was another white lip in the cage with them and kind of got all freaked out and squared up and sometimes even bit each other a little bit or head bumped each other, and then they just go back to being like, oh, okay. So it's freaky.
It's kind of a crapshoot, it seems. I do see that the compatibility does play a role in it, though, because there are specific animals that will just sit on kind of the opposite, you know, the opposite sides of the cage with each other, and then you'll swap up the pairs, and then you'll have ones that'll stay closer, and you might have some luck with. And to me, that sounded kind of silly the first time that I had heard it, but I've seen it from a few people and then seen it firsthand, and it really just seemed to be that way. Tends to be more so with the blacks and the golds, but it very well could be both.
Huh. Have you found that with scrubs as well?
Not that I've heard or seen. That's not to say that it couldn't be, but from anybody that I've talked to, I can't say I've heard that before.
All right. So... Okay, so go ahead.
No, I just saw something. I was going to ask you how your female hound is doing.
She's doing good.
And then the next thing that I was going to say is that you need to sell her to Jim Kurowski.
No. No. Those are staying.
No.
For
not
sure.
Fair.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to tell him it doesn't sound likely.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It turns out I have two females and a male. So,
my God.
As far as I have 2.2, but I used to think that I had 3.2, but now I have 2.2. So, pretty excited about that. You know, one of the things, I don't know if you guys have ever thought about this or tried this, but what I found for the hounds and all my scrubs is that, I've said this a couple times, and I guess it's easier for me being shorter. But
oh, yeah, putting them above your head? Yeah.
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 It It works yeah. great, man.
We need really tall ceilings then.
I found that
you could set their cage on a coffee table and it'll be tall enough in there.
Ow.
That was rough.
Yeah, but, that's what you get for opening that door.
But it's true. I found that they become more confident. They Ooh. Become.
I can agree to that, especially because they're used to looking down at people. I mean, I moved my Amazon tree boas into one of the 3-foot cages in my stacks of cages, and it was one all the way at the top, and I gave them a bunch of perches. And right now the female is, like, constantly out and about, and she's always staring down, like, looking at me with a, you know, glary kind of look on her face. But, you know, it's they seem to be more comfortable, and I'm seeing the two of them out and about more just because they're up higher. They don't really see me except at the top of my head. And for the most part, they're doing great. So I could definitely see where a scrub or another type of arboreal or even – higher strung animal would do better. It all goes back to the not being able to see me. So, you know, it's they feel they're up high and safe, and they're the one watching me. I'm not the one watching them. So, yeah, I can see where it would work.
Right.
Yeah. Huh. Chris is just going to have to army crawl around his snake room now. So, I mean,
yeah.
Everything will have to be done that way. So.
There you go. That's the secret to success.
That is. Don't let them see you. That's the secret.
Or I'll just have Eric come over and clean my cages.
There you go.
Yeah, I heard you guys still aren't going into the rat business, but, you know.
No, sorry, buddy.
We did make a decision on that we were kind of up for it, but we were just going to, you know, once we got started, you know, you were just going to fill in for our weekends every weekend. And
yeah, we'll pay you to do it.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah.
Why not? But, yeah, okay, so the I wanted to talk about this real quick, is the Moluccan scrubs. I know that you guys, don't you have a pair ready to go this coming season?
We have a
reverse trio ready.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Two boys, and then Kamikaze's ready, which, you know, God help us. And
yeah,
Abel,
you know, she's so outrageously aggressive, and every time I talk to David about that, he's like, "Oh, my aggressive females breed the best." So I'm frightened, but he's confident that won't be a problem. So we'll see how that goes.
The lucky thing is we were kind of concerned about how she would take to the younger male, and, of course, we were concerned about his well-being. But then we got this new boy who is – how big is he?
He's gorgeous, and he's probably like 8 or 9 feet, and she's about 7.
Yes, yeah, he's a big boy, so it's like, all right, go ahead and throw your hissy fit with him. You know, he's not going to care, and he's got a beautiful disposition. I mean – very handleable, and, you know, if we have another ICAST, I'll bring him with me. So we're hopeful for this year, you know, that we can get something.
So what's the approach going to be? I mean, what are you – how – this is your first time trying to breed scrubs. What's going to be how you approach it?
Well, when a mommy snake and a daddy snake love each other very much.
Oh, my God.
They decided to move into a cage together. So, yeah, well, I don't know.
I can't think of it anymore.
Some of the cycling, I think, is going to go similar to how the white lips are, obviously minus the dentite. Something that had been brought up to me, and I still don't know how I feel about it. I feel good as far as the aggression of the female, but I don't know how I feel about as far as the comfort and acclimation of the animals was to introduce them together into a separate cage that does not belong to either of them.
Neutral territory.
So that there's not there's really no defensiveness per se.
Huh. Now, I find with my males, especially with carpet pythons, when I go to get a male that I'm going to pick out as a breeder, I go for the more aggressive. I don't know how that works as far as a female. You know, I never thought about the female part of it, but I definitely go for the more aggressive male.
Yeah, I'm all about aggressive males. I'm just not, you know, especially after what we experienced with white lips last year, I don't really need a female that's going to kick the male's ass every time he gets near.
Yeah, we're kind of trying to put our calmer animals with our little bit more aggressive animals because we figure somebody will, you know, be more dominant than the other and we won't have too many fights. But putting a dominant animal with a dominant animal would just kind of lead to blood, I think. But either way, we're going to see what happens. We're kind of hoping just that by the fact that his size compared to hers is kind of deter her from acting like a jackass. But for all we know, all 6 foot, 7 foot of her can still beat the piss out of him, and then we got to deal with a very large upset Malukan that got beat up by a girl. So
right.
Honestly, I think she'll be fine once he's in there. I just think that introduction process is enough, because if you're 5 feet from her cage, she's banging her face on the glass.
Yeah, she might think
which
he's
is kind of why I like the concept of kind of the mutual territory. For whatever reason, by habit, I've always introduced males to females. I don't really know anybody who's introduced female to male, but I guess possibly be an option, too, with the male not being very defensive.
Well, there's also normally what happens is that doesn't the male hunt down the female? Doesn't he, like, just kind of start tracking one and then find her? So it would be kind of more conducive to have the boy introduce the female's cage, but if we're worried about kind of defensive territory guarding, putting it in neutral territory would be kind of like they just kind of ran into each other. So why not? So either way, I could see it could work.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't really know. I guess I would go with the male into the female, but I don't know why the other wouldn't work, but I'm curious to see what, I hope you guys have success with it, but,
yeah.
You know, make sure you take notes, you know?
We know what part of my problem is, though, is that because I've witnessed some bad stuff of snakes attacking each other, I just have this stuck in my head that because the snake's aggressive, it's going to attack another snake. And I think just because I have this fear of something else going wrong, where that's not necessarily the reality of all species. Just because she's aggressive doesn't mean she's going to take his head off when you put him in there. She could very well just be focused on me and get along with another snake.
Yeah, that's true. That's very
true. So I think That could be the reality of it. So I might, you know, give that a spin first and see how she responds, since that seems to be the way to go in most cases.
Do you think that, you know, if I'm taking Moluccan scrubs, do you think that they'll ever become a species that becomes popular in the reptile hobby?
Yeah. I think that they could be, because if we ever do get a hold of the breeding, I very easily think they'll be the most popular scrub, because if you're not heavy into the scrubs like some of us, I think that somebody from, you know, who's an outsider, outside of Tannin Bars, they're essentially the smaller of the localities, and they're kind of a vibrant yellow. When you look at, you know, go onto the scrub page in Facebook, Moluccans almost always get the most likes they have this screaming yellow at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's kind of like with, you know, with carpet pythons, when the carpets, you know, started to expand, it was because jaguars caught everybody's eye. Something vibrant that, you know,
kind of
expand into the general public. I don't know that that's going to take off significantly when we're still dealing with, you know, wild caught imports, but if anybody ever gets the hold on the, you know, some consistent breeding, then yeah, I think it could. And for the most part, with the exception of Kazi, I think that, you know, maybe just by coincidence of my animals, but I always thought that my Moluccans were the most handleable of my scrubs.
They are. They are.
Yeah,
I mean, they no worse than a aggravated miniature carpet. I mean, they're not bloodthirsty, run amok kind of bitey scrubs. So, and the contrast that they have between them with the colors between the scales as well as their eyes. Hazel's got these bright red eyes, which are awesome with her scales, and they're gorgeous. So I would kind of see Malukans being the one scrub that everyone would kind of drift to if they wanted a scrub, because it's not as big as a Barneck, and, you know, it kind of, it's a little bit bigger than the Tannin Bars. It's kind of like in the middle of the road, which is kind of seeing where everybody kind of goes. So...
And I think that I love the Tannin Bars, and you know we're getting a group and we're going to try those this year. But I think you know they're potentially the most manageable scrub. I just don't know that they're going to catch the eye of the general keeper that doesn't necessarily have an initial passion for scrubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, Tannin Bars are kind of like
Tannin Bars are hit or miss.
They kind of get attention of, coastal carpets kind of get. They're kind of, it's like a patternless carpet. It's kind of like, people.
Hey, some of us here love coastal carpet pythons, okay?
I absolutely love coastal carpet pythons. They're one of my favorite subspecies of carpet pythons. But I think when you're sitting at a reptile show, and
it's
you have
the bright yellow jungle across the street that makes it look all purdy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you know,
and that jungle is essentially the Moluccan of shrubs. So it's,
You have a exanic and it's patternless. I mean, you got two strikes against you. I personally think they're awesome animals, but you know.
Out of Tannin Bars, I like the exanic patterned ones the best. Those are the prettiest, in my opinion. And
right.
I'm hoping we get some of those this year. So.
My fingers are crossed for you. You know, I know Buddy, I don't know if he got out of that project because I know he was looking to thin down his collection and whatnot. And I'm sorry that not to see him have success with the project.
It's
but I kind of think if he would have went one more year, he would have had success.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like I'm certainly grateful to be getting them, but I feel like he was so close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that that is exactly what I'm trying to explain when it comes to those type of projects. I think, you know, they're long-term projects, and you're talking 10 years, you know, I think sometimes before you'll have success. And, you know, some people have the time and, you know, but a lot of times your life changes and things happen and, you know, life happens, and you have to make decisions. You know, and sometimes that's what happens. And if that's kind of your side project gig, you know, they don't really get the same attention as, you know, maybe some of your more mainstream, you know, animals in your collection. And I think that's why you see I think that's really why we're seeing a lot of success when it comes to Bowens pythons, more and more.
People stuck with it. And people have raised up babies from like baby, raised them up, spent the time, got them acclimated to how they work and do things, and now you're going to start seeing success, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, why attempt to recreate the wild for an animal that was pulled from it at an age of like 3 or 4? Why not get a hatchling and basically make this the only thing it's ever known? So you're fighting a little bit of instinct, yes, but you're not fighting a lot of, well, this isn't right. It's just like, oh, well, man, this is when it gets a little cooler, and maybe I'll go over here and make babies. So, yeah, it'll be easier this way.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that you guys have a tremendous amount of success with them because, like I said before, I'm kind of gearing my collection to the stuff that you guys don't have and you would want. So that we can...
Yeah, you are, and that's... you're becoming insanely dangerous. I mean, you're already pretty bad, but,
Well,
you
know, I mean,
worse.
A lot of the a lot of the stuff that you guys talked about on the last show as far as the business and setting up, you know, doing projects that, you know, you talked about corn snakes and, you know, is, you know, doing this project at a table at a show in order to pay for it and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I thought I've been thinking a lot about that lately, as you guys have known, I've talked to you about it, and maybe opening up to some other projects. So I have a little more variety on the table, because like I said at the beginning of the show, when it comes to customer service and you promoting yourself as, even if it's just a hobby business, you know, I think that I become a brand, a variety, you know, in the reptile world. So if you like my customer service, or you like how I take care of my animals, or, you know, my collection, or et cetera, you know, I want to be able to offer you something. And I think you hit it on the head, Chris, is that you were talking about, you know, I think you guys were talking about corn snake. Guy comes and buys a corn snake, and then you're looking at it as a potential customer at a later date for, you know, another animal, whether it be carpet python or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Let's be realistic. How many of these people, you know, they're either out in the next 2 years or they caught the bug.
Yes.
And if they caught the bug, what are you going to do to make sure they come back to you and don't go to the table next to you?
Exactly. You're absolutely right. You know, and I think that if you're gearing, I guess that's where the business part of it comes in, and where you're approaching it from a business angle. And I think the balance is that trying to do it as a business, but at the same time still doing stuff that you like, you know. For instance, if I was a reptile breeder, I personally, as much as I probably think I may even open up more doors when it comes to lizards or the four-legged animals, that's not my gig, and I can't do it. You know what I mean? I really think they're cool animals, and I really enjoy looking at them and listening to people talk about them. But me personally, that's something that I would do.
Oh,
you know,
I just babysat a white throat monitor for probably going on to a month, and I just kind of stuck in one of my carpet cages, and it left 2 days ago, but I cleaned out the cage. The amount of damage that thing did to one of the cages just by being a monitor, oh, it hurts. the glass looks like it's glass. The plastic glass down to that cage looks like it's frosted, because the thing just scratched the shit out of the so pissed off. But
wow.
That's just the way they are. They need to burrow. They need to dig. They move things. They can be displeased by their water bowl and throw it halfway across the cage. You have to get special glass, or with one swing of a tail, they can break the glass. So it's something that no. If it's got four legs, I don't want it. Except for the dog. He has to stay.
So. Yeah, right. But, you know, I don't know. It's just something that, you know, I was thinking about. And the, you know, the whole thing when you're approaching it from the hobbyist point of view, like I've kept bearded dragons, I've kept monitors, I've kept Chinese water dragons.
Stint with crested geckos.
No, that I was approaching that as the business part of it. But I'm talking about when I was just strictly a keeper, not ever had any inclination of being a breeder. You know, then it was cool because I didn't really have the breeder mindset, you know. It wasn't in that mindset. So, yeah, I had these were my pets. They were cool. I liked them. I dug them. But now that it's more like it's a hobby. It's an escape. I really dig it. When I was away from it for a week, it really kind of re-energized me as far as you know, wanting to get in the snake room and working with the animals and such, and really missing that, you know. So, take a vacation. One thing that I will say...
Everyone should go to Florida.
I wonder, I'm telling you, man, what an awesome place to breed reptiles. I mean, dude, that's like the perfect spot. As I was driving around and we're going to different spots and all, and I was like, man, look at that house. If I had this and I had that, and
I could put these here. I'm actually surprised you came back and it wasn't one of those, Owen, you should go over to my place and box up all my stuff and slap this shipping label I'm emailing to it on there, okay? Sending all my reptiles to me.
And the land down there is so cheap, man. Oh, my God.
Stop it. Chris is right there, okay? I mean, he's right here. He's hearing you, okay?
And yeah.
Still going to happen, Owen.
He's always
I'm
been like,
you,
you should move to Florida. No, no. You can go down there. I'll stay here.
I was thinking about that on my way up, you know, because when I was driving up, I'm thinking, man, I can't picture Owen in anywhere other than Pennsylvania because
have you met me? I'm nothing but pale skin and freckles. You can put me in the sun? What the hell is wrong with you? That'll kill me. So,
but
no.
It was really cool. Just being down there and being in that environment. I don't know. I loved it, you know, and I was at my brother-in-law's house, and he has a big yard, and I mean, when I say big yard, it's huge, and I'm like, wow, you know, I could build a nice reptile house out here, and
I wouldn't have to
heat it, and I could just open the window in the winter, and it would cool down, and
Eric's outside like his brother-in-law's place with a tape measure, you know, it's time to come back to Pennsylvania.
But I don't know. It's just such a different feel. But I don't know. I don't know if you can do scrubs down there though.
I believe that they are legal.
You need to get a Class 3 sales permit to do actual amethystina. You can do Moluccans and Tannin bars, but it's a little trickier for the others. But it can be done.
Gotcha.
See, he's already looked into it. So.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I already anticipated the move. I thought that I didn't think my last move was going to be an hour from home. I thought it was going to be 20 hours from home, so I was ready to take them. I already had warehouse space ready that I was going to split with somebody. I wasn't even going to keep stuff at home.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's another thing. I don't know who we get on to talk about that, but, like, how do you even go about finding a place like that, you know. I tried to look it up a little bit because
up here it's tough, but down there, for whatever reason, their storage units, anything under the sun, it's not too hard. Where up here, people are kind of weirded out by it. It seems pretty normal down there. There's the guy that I was going to share space with was Greg from the Retic Ranch, which you don't really hear of anymore because he mainly exports this stuff, but he just has a regular multi-bay storage unit, but he has like 4 or 5 bays, and he sublets them out to other people.
Yeah, that's kind of the way to do it, you know.
He's nuts. He's got like 40 or 50 adult retics.
Wow, that's a lot of room.
Yes, that's a little bit of room. I mean, I'd love to get something going on up here, like warehouse or storage thing wise, so you know, that would be cool.
Well, if you're in the Pennsylvania area and you can turn us on some storage space available, or
if you have a giant
storage
warehouse out in back and don't mind if we throw a bunch of reptiles in it, let
contact
us know.
Contact either Eric or Owen and maybe we can work something out.
Email it us at info@moreliapythonradio.com. Is that the actual email? I was just kind of guessing.
Yes, good job.
Oh my God, I remembered it.
So
it's only been like 2.5 years, but
yeah, right. I have one last question before we jump off, and this is a scrub topic. And I'm just wondering why you never see scrub guys cross localities.
Ooh, I think it's like sacrilege.
I know, and I'm trying to figure out why. why they don't do it.
It's kind of a weird thing, and I think there's a few different reasons. But first, why do you cross carpet localities?
To get the purpose, either a brighter jag or a funkier looking albino or the morph that you can't get by keeping pure stock.
What if you didn't have any morphs? Then what would your reason be?
To have a clutch of them. So if I had a coastal that came from Queensland and I had a coastal that came from Brisbane, and they're both coastals, why wouldn't I cross them? They're coastals.
But they're from different places. People care differently. It's like how the one guy who's got a pure diamond python will breed it to a 50% diamond jungle because it says it has diamonds in it, and I want pretty yellow babies. So, but then there are other people who only take that pure diamond with documented bloodline and breed it to another pure diamond with documented bloodline. Anything below that is a waste of that animal's time.
Sure, and I understand that, but I'm gonna take this and stretch this out for a second. Just bear with me.
All right. Yeah.
So my thought is this: is that when it comes to scrub pythons, one of the reasons that everybody's so caught up in locality, and I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. You know, I like the localities. They have different looks. They have different ways of. They may even be different subspecies or species. Who knows? It may fall into like what chondros are, where you have, you know, the northerns and the southerns, and they're separate. It kind of makes sense to me why they would kind of be the same thing. But anyway, when you have like, a sarong, and then you have something that's a jayapura, am I right in saying that a sarong is a darker animal?
From what I've seen of sarongs, they tend to be darker.
I don't know if he's an actual locality. He's produced by Dave Prada. So, I guess that's what I'm getting at is like, okay, so I have these two scrub pythons. I'm going to put them together and breed them and hopefully have success and try to figure out what it is. And, you know, down the road, yeah, absolutely, I'm going to do locality stuff as well. But right now I'm just trying to figure out how to get these things to breed and maybe establish some in captivity. So don't you think that it's no different? See, they call it a locality. Some people call it a morph, but you're breeding for a specific phenotype. So what's the difference?
I think that, I mean, it's a tough example when you say, Jaya versus sarong because they're so similar looking. But I feel like the vast differences among the different localities is just kind of it's a purist type attitude. Like where you say that, different locality of coastals, do you feel that they differ as greatly as a sarong differs from a southern?
A Brisbane and a Queensland? Yes. Brisbanes get bigger. They're usually, they look different, whereas something that's more northern would be more typical of what you would see jungle type of carpet python. But my point
goes by opinion, though, because when you tell me that about carpets, then I wouldn't cross those either.
Well, I guess it really comes down to what you believe as far as, is a coastal, is a southern coastal different than a northern coastal? Are jungles the same as coastals, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, if you believe that they're definitely not the same thing, then, I get where you're coming from. And I'm not trying to say that locality breeding is bad, because when it comes to chondros, that's kind of what I like the most. I like locality stuff. I like the locality type of things. And I like that in scrubs as well. I guess I'm just wondering why it's such a, it's so hard to find a match locality-wise. And then how do you even know that it is that locality? So
well, that's the next thing that I was going to say, and that's the whole monster behind this conversation, and that's also why you see certain people use the word type
correct.
Rather than locality, because this stuff isn't traced as well as the Australian stuff or as well as some of the, you know, the first-hand fuel-collected green tree pythons, and that we have no freaking idea where this stuff is coming from. And there's a theory now that, you know, the stuff that we call Jayas aren't even from Jaya. They're from, like, I think David said, like, Bird's Head Peninsula or something, and it's actually the Wamina-type stuff that could be from the Jaya area, and it sounds like we have everything backwards. And then we might find out that all that stuff is backwards. I don't know where any of this is coming from. So really, it's almost like we're putting our own name on it. You can start calling them purple, yellow, and green locality if you want, but it's just that they look the way they look, and I think until we have more information, we're just trying not to, you know, to the best of our ability, not merge what we don't know, you know?
Yeah,
I get that, but I guess, like, when I look at something like what you're saying, you know, if you're looking at a rue or a Wamina scrub, they have a specific look to them, or this locality or that locality, or like a highland-type scrub looks, you know, like this, and a southern scrub looks like that, and I get what you're saying, but then I wonder, you know, why would you be... It's almost like you're trying to keep that same look. So what's the difference between that and breeding morphs? You see what I'm trying to say? Like, if you look at an Aru, it looks a certain way. Has a certain phenotypical look to it. And you're saying, okay, I want to make sure that I find an animal that looks like that. It might not even be an Aru. It doesn't even make a difference. You don't know if it's from Aru or if it's from not. But you're looking at these characteristics, and you're saying that this looks like an Aru type of scrub, of what we think is an Aru type of scrub. So I'm going to breed these two together. But what if they're not Arus? What if the both of them are not Arus? Or what if one is and one isn't? Is it going to somehow make those scrubs not legit anymore? So I'm wondering, like, you know, it seems like we're holding on to this notion that, you know, I'm not going to breed this until I find a suitable mate. And I get it. I'm not downing that. I'm not putting that down. I'm just wondering, like, if you wanted to sort of figure out scrubs and try to push them along and maybe try to breed, be more consistent in breeding them, wouldn't you just kind of breed what you kind of have that kind of looks similar?
Yeah, and in some cases, I kind of think that's kind of what we're down to. I mean, when you have an unknown history and you put a Jaya next to a sarong, I mean, I'm no proclaimed expert in localities, but I get them mixed up sometimes. I don't know. And I have an Aru that, you know, is almost yellow-orange. So to me, it doesn't look like any other Aru I've seen, but people think it's an Aru. I don't know what the hell it is. I just know that I like the way it looks, and I ideally would like to breed it to something that looks the same because, like you said, I want to keep that phenotype appearance.
Right. So isn't that the same as selectively breeding or breeding a morph? See what I mean?
Yeah, essentially, because, I mean, I guess, because all we know is that, you know, more than likely, I use the term very loosely, but more than likely it's a southern-type variety, and when I say southern, I don't necessarily mean, you know, Marooks. I just mean on, you know, I guess south of, I don't know what the actual divider is for that. So without knowing what it is, who says that you can't breed it to, you know, to another Marook just to find success in breeding the scrubs, which is kind of what you were pointing at. I guess it's just a matter of personal preference. Like I sit on this Kofi owl knowing that, you know, there appears to be no males in the country, and it's just kind of hanging out at David's house, so why can't I breed it to something else? I don't know. It's just kind of stuck in my head.
I guess that's my point. It's just like you have this idea, and, you know, I'm just wondering why that's so ingrained in this branch of the Morelia world and not... I guess it's similar to, well, no, not really, because you don't have that in chondros. You have some people that breed outside of that, and they get these crazy tights. So I'm just thinking of those animals that you had at Carpet Fest and how cool they looked. You know what I mean? Like, wow, that's hot looking snake, man. And wasn't that a southern and something else? Those animals you picked up?
Yeah.
From David?
The babies were captive bred southerns. But then he had that big one, and we still don't know what the hell that is.
Right.
So you're kind of in the same boat of we just kind of, there's some things that look beyond, there's some, you know, something that makes it look like a few different other things where it's just kind of in hope of finding something even relatively close at this point.
Yeah, I don't think you find the same thing in anything but the Barnecks. I mean, with Malukans, I think you pretty much have the same, you know, Halmaharas. It almost seems like there's two types of Halmaharas, too. I don't know if you take notice of that. I see dark ones and I see light ones. I don't know if that's something.
I don't know. Yeah, is that a locality thing or a color phase? I don't know.
Yeah. It's you know, who knows? And I don't think that you're going to see, I guess, until we breed them and see what happens and see how they raise up. You know, but like even with Halmahera, is that, you know, if you're looking at Halmaharas, where they're picked up on that island, is it going to make a difference? Do you not breed this Halmahera to that Halmahera? Because, you know, you see what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. It kind of seems weird that Barnecks fall into this category where you don't cross this. Even Malukans, don't they have different type of looks to them as far as...
Yeah, you got the pattern, you got the stripe, you got yada, yada, yada.
Head structures are different a little bit?
But there's head structures different compared to carpet pythons. You know, you have some of them have the big broad head, and you have some of them have the slimmer head. But,
they're kind of busy because there are some tells between Saram and Nambon localities. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure which one is which, but that did kind of point at what you're trying to say.
Yes, yeah. So we would breed them together. So, you know, I don't know. It's just interesting. I find it interesting. You know, sometimes us, our little quirks as us as reptile breeders, I find very interesting in how we think about things or approach things. And we all have them, you know, and... It was funny. I heard you, Owen, saying last week it's albino zebra jag, and you're like, no, I can't have a cross. I'm like, wait a minute.
I can't do it. That's
yeah.
Too many.
Shut up.
I'm like, huh? Scratching my head. I'm sitting on the beach wait a minute. You mean he would keep a regular zebra jag, but he's not going to keep an albino.
That's too far. That's one too far. Yeah. One too far. Whoa now. Whoa.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not that I won't keep them up. It's just that I want the pure albino Darwins first, because I have all the building blocks to make my own shit, so I might as well do it that way. So that's why I would love someone to come out of the woodworks and give me two albino Darwins for some super caramels. Where are you, people? I just laid it out there. Email, damn it.
I hear crickets.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's just funny how we paint our little boxes and we don't step out of them. It's like, whoa, that's too far of a line to cross, man. You know?
Well, let's put it this way. How disappointed would you be if somebody took, like, a jungle carpet python and bred it to a female Halmahera?
Yeah. Well, look at me. You know, this is I'll even point out my own little quirks, right?
So here
I am, and I'm breeding this one to that one and that one to this one and da-da-da-da-da. And there was actually a paper that I don't know if it came out yet or if it's in the works, but it was posted up a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about how carpet pythons are just one group. There's no separation. There's none of that stuff. And I talked about this a long time ago on the radio show, and I said, what if a paper comes out one day and they say that this is the fact, Is it going to change everybody's mindset? Probably not. Even though what they're just because you don't want to believe that it's true doesn't mean it's not true. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it's still true. You don't have to believe it, but it's still true. The science is still true. So I'll breed a jungle to a coastal. I'll breed a coastal to a diamond. I have diamond crosses with jungles. I have Irian Jayas with da 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 da. Right? But Brettles? Oh no 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 no! You can't breed that.
So
we won't do caramel
albino zebra bread lie.
Yeah, it's like this weird line that I won't cross. It's like, I really dig them and I think they're cool, and I may even have one that I would work with, but I personally will not breed it. It's like, I can't breed this jag.
I'm gonna buy you a Brettel jag just to fuck with you.
But you see what I mean? How we all have our own little quirks, where it's like, oh no, can't cross that line.
No
way.
No, oh no. It's like how I keep teasing that I'm going to breed my chondro to my rough scales and be like the battle chondro, just because I wouldn't know what to do with myself if I actually did that. I'd be so disgusted with me. I'd be like, really? You did this? What the hell's the matter with you? So.
Right.
I know there's someone out there who actually thinks it's a viable and good idea.
Yes. I think it's actually. I think just the name alone is just badass.
It's worth it. I should do it just because I might lose the name. Yeah,
just the
I should
name
do it.
Alone.
Otherwise someone else is going to do it and call it like something stupid.
Battle.
So, I should do it just so I can lock in the name and be like, everyone's like, and then there's the battle chondro. Thanks, Owen. And like, hey, you're welcome. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that concludes our broadcast, since we're way over on time here. Let's see. I don't know if you guys have anything else you wanted to hit on. Or...
Yeah, I think I'm good.
Good? Chris?
Yeah, I think we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll run down the list and let you guys talk about Rogue at the end, and then we'll bow out, okay? So,
cool.
Big thanks. Morelia Python forums, MoreliaPythons.com. I didn't put the www in there. Since
good job. We're learning already. Yeah.
There you go. So, yeah, go over there and check that out. You heard my little rant about Facebook, but that's not going to matter much. But, you should go check it out. Check out the Reptile Marketplace. It's marketplace.thereptilereport.com. Go over there if you have some animals you want to post up for sale, or if you're looking for a new project. It's a cool place where you can, like Chad was talking about at the beginning of the show, you can streamline the search to your specifics of what you're looking for, and makes it super easy. Don't forget about the, like I said, the RACA, R-A-A-C-A raffle. Ends on the 4th of July. One person will win over $35,000 in prizes. You can buy your tickets and check out what you win at RACA.net. RACA.net. Don't forget about the, if you're over on the West Coast and you're in the Seattle area, check out the Northwest Carpet Fest, which is on 7/26. It's in Seattle, Washington. You can, they're holding an auction to benefit U.S. Arc and Rico Walder, and they're looking for donations of products. They already have some nice animals lined up and some products. I think Heather is going to be posting some teaser picks up on the group page soon, so go over and check out the Northwest Carpet Fest group page. Find out more information over there. Don't forget a booster for the Bolens Pythons
the booster.
Research. Holy
smokes.
I'm glad
you brought that up.
We got eight days to go.
Something about Bolens Pythons. You guys just absolutely eat them up. So.
I know. We've raised $1,140. We hit three more shirts and we can hit $1,200. So let's hit three more shirts in 8 days and let's do it to it.
Yeah, get it done. You guys are doing great.
So thank you, everybody, for their support with that, and I'm sure Ari thanks you as well. And don't forget, you'll be able to hear all about his exciting trip that he's going to be taking when he comes back and talks to us about it. That's the deal, and I can't wait to hear all about it. Hey, Chris, maybe you even will sit in on that show because he'll be talking all about Papua New Guinea and bowlings and scrubs and all that kind of stuff. So there you go.
Yeah, take my place because clearly I don't care. So.
Yeah, you lost your Bowens Python card.
I did. Lost the Bowens card, yeah. Shame.
Until they become like ball pythons on the table, you're not having
everywhere. Oh, man, I won't, yeah. Yeah, I'll buy everybody because they're all getting out of it because they become too mainstream. So
they're not cool. I like Bowens
pythons. They're not cool anymore. I used to be into Bowens before it was cool. Yeah, I know. Yes, yeah. Eric. So.
Okay, so, yeah, go over there to the booster, and if you didn't get a shirt, make sure you pick one up because it's a cool shirt. Bowens Python on the front, Moran Python Radio. You can sport it at your local reptile show. You know, it was pretty cool going down to Florida because I had quite the selection of shirts to wear as I went to all these various reptile spots. And I did have one person recognize Morelia Python Radio, which was pretty cool.
No freaking way.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I kind of played it off like, oh, yeah, those guys are really cool. And
really?
I played
you
it
didn't
off.
Be like, I'm the host. Let me sign your shirt.
Not at first. I kind of played it cool. It's kind of like, yeah, I really dig that show, man. And, you know, yeah, the person was.
You're that Owen character. Yeah.
Nobody really got him on point. He's like, and by the way, it's me.
It's me. Oh, yeah. And there was screaming girls emerged out of nowhere.
It was exactly cool.
How that happened.
Down to Florida. So thanks for the support, everybody, as far as Morelia Python Radio goes. But, yep.
It's funny because, like, I did laundry, and I'm folding up all my clothes, and I'm like, Rogue T-shirt, iCast T-shirt, you know, two Carpet Fest T-shirts. I'm like, holy crap, my entire wardrobe is slowly turning into all reptile-related. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I was down there for a week, and I had a shirt for every day. Morelia Python Radio, check out our website, moreliapythonradio.com. That is sort of the – we kind of look at that, you know, like Chad was saying about the universe as far as the reptile world goes. Well, I kind of am looking at moreliapythonradio.com as kind of the Morelia hub for everything Morelia, pointing in the directions of what you need or maybe what you were breeder-wise, you know, suggestion-wise, book-wise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So go over and check it out. If you want to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, you can check out the page for updates and the cool happenings of what's going on with Morelia Python Radio. If you have any questions for us, send us an email at info@moreliapythonradio.com. You can check us out on iTunes. If you missed the show live, you can always download it the next day. Next week we have David Kelly. We'll be talking about diamond pythons. As far as myself personally, E.B. Morelia, I should have a clutch of albino, caramel, jags, hatching out.
Hippopotamus,
tomorrow. So we'll see. Tomorrow's day 55. That's exactly when my albino zebras and albino zebra jags hatched out. So hopefully I'll have some pics for everybody so they can check them out. The albino stuff should be shedding any day now. So I guess once they get going and established and shedding and whatnot, I'll be posting up pictures of them all the time probably. I have some cool stuff that will be hatching out. So if you're interested in any of that, you can contact me personally at eric@ebmorelia.com. You can follow the Facebook page or Twitter for us. One of the things that I have signed up for myself that's worked out pretty well is Instagram. I got a lot of feedback from that as far as EB Morelia goes. So I'm over on Instagram if you're interested, EB Morelia. and you can check that out as well. For me, that is all I have. It's all you, Owen and Chris. All
right. For the Rogue stuff, what we have is rogue-reptiles.com. You get bios on all the animals that we have, as well as some news. Where you can get the latest updates, of course, is Rogue's Facebook page. Just go onto Facebook and search Rogue Reptiles. You'll find us, all the latest happenings at Rogue. And
we can buy some rings.
What was that?
To buy some caramels so we can buy some rings.
God damn right. Anyway, well, what the thing is that if you go and like the Rogue Facebook page, you'll see all the animals that we have up for sale a week before we put them up on the other websites that we sell our snakes at. That'll be kingsnake.com, Fauna Classifieds, and now the Reptile Report Marketplace. So I would go check that out. Right now we have caramels, super caramels, caramel jags, caramels from last year, bunch of corn snakes, is a bunch of stuff. So definitely go check that out and contact us if you're looking for anything. As far as shows, we have one coming up on the 19th of July. That's the Lancaster Reptile and Bird Expo. Should be a lot of fun. After that, we have the August 2nd Hamburg Reptile Show. And, of course, we also have Tinley in October. So I felt like mentioning that one. Anyways, definitely go
damn
check
straight.
Us out. Drop us a line. Yeah, thank you. Drop us a line, myself or Chris. And that's all we got for today and all we got for this week. We will thank everybody for stopping by, and we will see you all next week for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night.
Hey, Chad Brown here. You may remember me as a linebacker in the NFL or as a reptile breeder and the owner of ProExotics. I've been herping since I was a boy, and I've dedicated my life to advancing the industry and educating the community about the importance of reptiles. I also love to encourage the joy of breeding and keeping reptiles as a hobbyist, which is why my partner Robin Markland and I created the Reptile Report. The Reptile Report is our online news aggregation site bringing you the most up-to-date discussions from the reptile world. Visit thereptilereport.com every day to stay on top of the latest reptile news and information. We encourage you to visit the site and submit your exciting reptile news, photos, and links so we can feature outstanding breeders and hobbyists just like you. The Reptile Report offers powerful branding and marketing exposure for your business, and the best part is, it's free. If you're a buyer or a breeder, you gotta check out the Reptile Report Marketplace. The Marketplace is the reptile world's most complete buying and selling destination, full of features to help put you in touch with the perfect deal. Find exactly what you're looking for with our advanced search system. Search by sex, weight, morph, or other keywords, and use our Buy It Now option to buy that animal right now. Go to marketplace.thereptilereport.com and register your account for free. Be sure to link your Marketplace account to your Ship Your Reptiles account to earn free tokens with each shipping label you book. Use the Marketplace to sell your animals and supplies and maximize your exposure with a platinum ad that also gets fed to the Reptile Report and our powerful Marketplace Facebook page. Buying or selling? Use shipyourreptiles.com to take advantage of our discounted priority overnight shipping rate. ShipYourReptiles.com can also supply you with the materials needed to safely ship your animals successfully. Use ShipYourReptiles.com to take advantage of our discounted priority overnight shipping rates, the materials needed to ship the reptiles successfully, live customer support, and our live, on-time arrival insurance program. We got you covered. Visit thereptilereport.com to learn or share about the animals. Click on the link to the marketplace, find that perfect pet or breeder, then visit shipreptiles.com to ship that animal anywhere in the United States. We are your one-stop shop for everything reptile related.